Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 99 of the Savager and Cruddy Sports Podcast here at, for you on a Wednesday night, June 15th, 7:31 p.m., as usual. Episode 99, the last episode for jersey numbers. So, you know,
that's what are we going to do?
I don't know. I don't know if we're going to be able to go on.
Just end it right now. Done.
Wayne Gretzky, the most notable name, of course. Taco Fall, Jay Crowder, Darko Milicic. Roy Rogers, not the drink, and Alex Verdugo and Byron Cowart. There are other 99s for the Patriots, but no one really all that notable. Ryan, what's going on, man?
Not much. I'm very nervous for tomorrow night for the Celtics. Not doing as good as I was maybe Friday when we did the show. But you know, holding out maybe a glimmer of hope. I might need you to convince me as we go throughout this show to have some faith in this team moving forward, because right now the confidence is not too high with how the Celtics have performed since we had a show on our last show on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, things are not in an ideal scenario. I think we can both say that pretty clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not over till it's over. You know, it's a cliche. It's true. As I tweet things out here real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think both of us are kind of in different camps with the team right now, but you know, there are some similarities with how we're looking at the team. So it'd be an interesting discussion. But before we get into that, we do have moments of the week. I have a lot more than you, but like more so quantity than like length.
Yep.
First, Little Caesars out pizza the Hut. So, you know, Pizza Hut deserves it. I got food poisoning the one time I ever went to Pizza Hut when I was 8. So fuck Pizza Hut. This is an anti-Pizza Hut podcast, unless you want to throw the bag. You know, we'll Jake Thibault, the Milton Academy hockey player who suffered a spinal cord injury like 9 months ago, did get up out of his wheelchair with a walker and walk at his graduation from Milton Academy, which is a really cool moment. Yep. Really cool. He was also on Spittin' Chicklets this week, and it was a cool interview. Really, really cool interview. Good to hear what's going on in his life. You know, although it's been hard for him with, you know, getting back in his, in the swing of things for him and, you know, trying to live a more normal life and rehab, which he's doing in Canton. It's cool to see what he's doing with the NHL and what he's done with the Bruins. So good for Jake. Congratulations to Jake. Mm-hmm. NFL fantasy, that's a tier 5, as I should say, you know, obvious for a good thing. Yep. NFL fantasy just does not include Tom Brady in their top 10 fantasy QB rankings. Who really gives a shit? But like, I mean, come on, you know, it's just
common sense.
Like really, did they make these before he came out of retirement and then they just released them? They had them scheduled for months later. I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but really dumb. It's like a tier 3 for me. I just really don't care that much, but
anyway, who's in the who is in the top 10 just to see if there's anybody that could, maybe he could bump. Cause if it's like, it's a fair,
I have one in mind.
Okay.
I have one in mind. Even though there is some, you know, merit to him being in the top 10, I guess. Josh Allen at 1, Justin Herbert at 2, Patrick Mahomes at 3, Kyler Murray at 4, Lamar Jackson at 5, Aaron Rodgers at 6, Joe Burrow at 7, Matthew Stafford at 8, Dak Prescott at 9, and Jalen Hurts at 10. Look, I know Jalen Hurts can run. He's a little bit of a dual threat guy, and now he has AJ Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
still, it's still Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, like come on.
Look at the weapons around both guys.
Eagles. He's on the Philadelphia Eagles. And yeah, Brady still has Godwin and Mike Evans primarily to work with. And you know,
probably going to get Gronk back.
Potentially. We'll see about Gronk, but there's a good possibility I think they do get him back. Just weird. Tier 3. And lastly for me, Al Horford's comments. Not really like a dickhead portion of this, but I'm like kind of just confused as to these comments from Al Horford, which will segue us, you know, good into more basketball talk. Mm-hmm. He said, "Now our backs are against the wall and we have to see what we're made of. The challenge begins on Thursday." Like, okay, I get it. But like the challenge, you could say began at the beginning of the series and at the beginning of the playoffs.
The I'm just going to say, how about had to the playoffs as a whole? 11
seed in January.
Yeah. Yep. Like, this challenge has been going on for 3.5 months now. Let's be honest. Like, I mean, I get where he's coming from, but to me, again, I mean, it's surprising that it comes from a guy like Al Horford, just because I mean, a lot of people now have been talking about just not really the accountability of this team, but again, kind of the same argument we've heard throughout the season and the playoffs when they've gotten into little funks like this or had bad games. It's just the lack of urgency seems to rear its ugly head with this team from time to time again. And now I feel like you could, and a lot of people are, maybe you being included because you have them here in the moments of the week, you know, again, just that no sense of urgency with this team. And it's a little unsettling that it's coming from a guy like Al Horford. Again, I get where he's, you know, that's the cliche that the down 3-2, your back's against the wall. He's going to say that. There's not really much else you can say there, but I'm with you. The challenge begins on Thursday comment maybe could have came out a little better. Like now we have even more of a challenge than we had to begin with. So like we put ourselves in a bad spot. So now we have to overcome that. But like, I can see this kind of getting, not being taken out of context, but like a little kind of uncertainty there with that's a bizarre timing for a comment like that.
Yeah. I just don't like it. It's like you said, especially from him too, of all people. Yep. You know, I know it's his first time in the finals, but
you're supposed to be the rock of this team, Al. You're supposed to be the guy that doesn't say things like this. It makes me even more unsettled.
It's not what I want to hear.
No,
definitely not what I want to hear. But like,
no,
I don't know. I gave it a tier two because it's like not that big of a deal, and yeah. I don't think I kind of doubt he like meant it like, oh, it hasn't been a challenge. Now I think he meant it more like, oh, it's because our backs are against the wall. Mm-hmm. It was the magnitude of the situation being greater than it ever has. Now it's, you know, a little different, I guess. But it was just not the best comment. You know, could have done it a little differently. But I gave it a tier two. It wasn't super egregious. But, I was like, what?
Yeah, it's not the timing for this, Al. Come on. Especially, like, as great as he's been, and I was going to touch on Al Horford a little later when the Celtics stuff. But as great as he's been in the playoffs, he's kind of disappeared these last four games of the finals. Like maybe it's because he's 36 years old now. Maybe the grind is finally catching up with Al. Again, don't want to take anything away from how great of a playoff and just postseason as a whole he's had, but like you need a little bit more from Al Horford. And you know, maybe I don't think, you know, like you said, he doesn't think the challenge is now just starting. It's been the entire second half of the season, but you hope maybe, you know, he obviously knows the severity of the situation and maybe comes out and plays one of his better games since game one of the final so far.
Yeah, we are kind of due for an Al game. We're due for an Al.
Yeah, I mean, they need somebody else. Like I said, we'll get into a little more after the moments of the week and stuff. But yeah, definitely need a little bit more out of Al Horford to hopefully force a game seven moving forward.
Yeah, they got to sort things out. But mm-hmm. You know, as I alluded to earlier, your moments or moment of the week this week talks about a different aspect of the series.
Yeah, this one focuses, again, more on the Warriors side. Kind of a weird story. And I put it in the moments of the week because, I mean, my thought of this whole story has changed over the last 24 hours when I originally saw the report come out and then the story come out and then now after seeing the video that that followed. For those who know Fake Clay, it's a Warriors fan who looks very similar to Klay Thompson. He's been to multiple finals I think he's been to multiple finals games. He's been to ring ceremonies. The article I was reading about him earlier today. So he's just a Warriors fan, big, you know, media presence guy. Dawson Gurley is the actual guy's name, Big Dawes TV on Twitter if you want to go check him out. Was banned yesterday from Chase Center or just any event at Chase Center by the Golden State Warriors for quote-unquote trespassing. So when I, like I said, when I first saw that come out and, you know, he posted the written statement that the Warriors sent out saying like you're banned and, you know, you were trespassing, all these things, all these official reports. I was like, well, you know, why are people getting so worked up? You know, the guy was trespassing. Like that's against the law. You can't do that. The video though came out today and just the complete negligence of the Golden State Warriors has made me flipped 100% to say that this guy he's a little in the wrong again for trespassing to some degree. But if you go and watch the video and the article I found, a lot of people have talked about it. It's been across Twitter. According to Dawson Gurley, again, Fake Clay, he was able to just stroll right by. He said, quote, five layers of guards who were willing to let him through security without asking for an ID, at which point he says he shot around, just again, shot being, you know, on the basketball court, did the shoot around for about 10 minutes on the court before security came back and, you know, asked him that, you know, what are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. Who let you in? All the typical security stuff. Like I said, at first I was, you know, going to be like, what is this guy doing? Why do you think you can just walk into Chase Center and do what you did? But then after seeing the video, he was basically let, there was even one, I don't know if you saw the video today. There was one security guard that he walked by that was like, yo, let's go get that win tonight, Clay. And he was like, all right, yeah, let's do it. Like, So everybody he came across, nobody questioned him in the, I think it was like a minute and a half long, 2 minute video. Nobody questioned this guy until the very end. And even the security guard, the woman that walked him out, was like, all right, that was pretty good. That was funny, but you need to go now. Like, so the security didn't seem to have a problem with it. The fact that the Warriors came out, like I said yesterday, and banned him from all future events, just anything to do with the Chase Center, like, is kind of ridiculous. And now I'm fully on. I saw, I think it was hashtag free fake Clay was trending on Twitter before we jumped on here. A lot of people were tweeting it out. So I have 100% flipped onto that now. So hashtag free fake Clay from this ridiculous story.
Yeah, I want to start off by saying this guy is a dork. Mm-hmm. But hilarious situation that he got past all these idiots
mm-hmm.
at the arena. Because, like, clearly they need to up their security. It's even though this guy was just, like a guy pulling a classic prank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a crazy world we live in. You got to be better with security. You never know what can happen with that, with people with bad intentions getting into mm-hmm. the arena.
Yep.
It's just, it's so, like, overboard to, I don't know if I'd say overboard because of the fact, because I do think he deserves a ban for being that stupid to do something. Well,
that's
like
what
that.
I mean. I'm very like, torn with this.
Lifelong ban is a little much.
Yeah. Like a year or two, maybe. Yeah.
Like,
that's what I have it as a tier like three. Season.
Maybe just
because I don't. Season. Yeah. Because I don't really know where to put it. Like, I don't want to like praise the guy for trespassing. And like you said, if it's a, you know, a lunatic or something like that, you know, bad things can happen. You don't want to see, obviously, you know, any sort of crimes committed or anything. But the, again, the fact that the Warriors, their own security, just let the guy walk right in. So can you really, if you're the Warriors, get pissed off at the guy for being let into the arena? Like, it's not like he snuck into the arena and then kind of made his way through security without anybody seeing him. He walked by multiple people. So there were definitely a lot of people out there. The funnier thing on the video, too, I watched is, you know, he was, again, shooting around. And then only after, I think, he airballed the layup, was he like, oh crap, maybe my cover's blown, I have to get out of here now. Well, maybe now people might think I'm not Klay Thompson because I couldn't hit
us. Like, he just like misses a shot, like, oh shit.
Yeah, man, well, that's what he was like. He missed
Klay yeah. never missed that shot. Yep.
Well, that's what I mean. He missed the layup right under the basket. Even his camera guy was like, bro, you just missed a layup from 2 feet away. He's like, yeah, we need to go now. Like, and then yeah, the security guard obviously came and got him. But yeah, I mean, it was ended up being harmless. Again, this is a guy that, you know, Warriors fans know. I think a lot of NBA social media and people that follow the NBA know this guy. He's been around since they, I'm pretty sure, gone and started going on their runs of championships. So it's not like this is a new event. And this guy has never kind of shown his face before until now. But
yeah. And I assume there are people out there that are getting super worked up about this. If you mm-hmm. are one of those people, you are too bored.
Yep.
You are too bored.
You just hate fun.
You are too bored. Mm-hmm. If you're getting like worked up, you know, like screaming free fake Clay or like, against it, whichever, you're bored. You need to be less bored. But yeah, I think that wraps up moments of the week pretty well. Segues into Celtics talk, where, you know, unfortunately we don't have any recent wins to talk about from the quicker turnaround than usual from Friday night's show. We have game four to start, which was a 107-97 loss for the Celtics.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we could have maybe had two wins, could have very easily been talking about the end of the NBA finals and the Celtics winning. Definitely gave away game five. We'll get to game five in a little bit, of course, but you know, like you said, start with game four. Game four heralded, of course, the Steph Curry game, drops 43 points, absolutely took over the third quarter, 14 points on 5 of 7 shooting, missed just 1 3. Second half, he had 24 points, missed just 1 3, was 5 of 6. It became, and it rightfully so, has become a series of, you know, one team superstar has elevated his play to almost single-handedly until, you know, Andrew Wiggins just decided to go LeBron James mode in game five. Steph Curry has put the Warriors on his back, or had until a couple nights ago. Jason Tatum, on the other hand, for the Celtics, has yet to show up. I know a lot of people, when this debate has come up, people will point to the box score and, you know, oh, he had 23 points in game four and had 27, I think, in game five. But if you just have watched his performance throughout these finals, I'm not going to say the playoffs because he was great up until the finals. He just hasn't looked right. And maybe that's, you know, the shoulder injury or the stinger, whatever, you know, the injury might be. Maybe that's getting to him. Maybe he's fatigued. You know, I think he definitely saw that in game five towards the end when he was airballing shots, which is completely, you know, uncharacteristic of him. But you need more from Jason Tatum. You need him to at least match or try to match Steph Curry when he puts on these type of performances. Some people have said you just need Jason Tatum to show up when Steph Curry does that. And I don't think they're too far off because, like I said, you know, he's had moments. Game four didn't get off to a terrible start. but failed to do anything in late in the game. Fourth quarter, he has just 3 points on 1 of 5 shooting. Second half as a whole had 7 points on 2 of 9 shooting, had a couple turnovers again. I think he now has the record for most turnovers in a postseason. He broke LeBron's record. So, you know, maybe not a category you want to see yourself in with LeBron James. But that's just kind of been what it's, yeah, that's just kind of been one of my big things. You know, you saw it in game four, you saw it again in game 5 that Jason Tatum in the big moment. Now there's a lot of people that have started questioning just can Jason Tatum step up in the big moment or does he crumble? I think right now it's not crazy to say that he has kind of faltered, or not kind of, he's definitely faltered in these big moments. Exactly. Yeah, he hasn't exactly.
Like he said, yep. I think he said moments in these past couple of games. You know, mm-hmm. I think the shoulder has to be bothering him at least a little bit at this point, which doesn't help anything. Mm-hmm. It only hurts it.
Yep.
No pun intended. But it's tough because it was one of those things where you were kind of hoping and getting optimism along the way that this wasn't going to be a thing. Like after this year, no matter what the Celtics ended up doing, how their season ended up going, when all was said and done, we could stop hearing about this Tatum stuff maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. It's a reasonable question to ask right now. I'm not like super on one side more so than the other, but they do need more from Tatum, and it'll be highlighted more as we talk, you know, in game 5 about certain things that went down mm-hmm. in game 5. But it's a tough spot for Tatum, but you know, this is obvious, but it's not all his fault. You know, it's
no, absolutely not. I know
a lot more to what's going on than just Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, throw the blame around to anybody or try to figure out, you know, where you put the most blame on. But I mean, I think Tatum, if you were to do that, he gets a decent amount, but like you said, he's not, I mean, this team, again, I said it at the start of this, has given away 2 games, frankly, with just their play in general. Their offense has become completely stagnant. As we get into that, kind of the fourth quarter collapse that they had, because really for the first time in the series, you saw the third quarter or a third quarter that, you know, didn't doom the Celtics. They came out, they outscored Golden State 30-24 in the third quarter. They shot the lights out, held Golden State to just 27.3 from deep. But then the fourth quarter comes, and like I said, Boston just can't seem to overcome anything. Golden State outscores them 28-19. Celtics did have a 5-point lead with like 8 minutes to go, or an 8-point lead. I can't remember exactly what the number was. But Golden State ends the game on a 15-3 run with 4:26 left in the game. A lot of people, myself included, I want to get your thoughts on this, was just not the play calling, but Boston's decision-making down the stretch. Their last, 7, maybe we'll exclude the Derek White shot at the end of the game because it was over at that point. But for the most part, we'll say the last 7 shots, the Celtics, all 3-pointers for some reason. Jaylen Brown missed a 3 when they were up 1. Tatum misses a 3 when they're down 3. Smart missed a 3 when they're down 3. Brown got the offensive rebound on that trip. Smart missed another 3. Al Horford missed a 3 down 3, made a 3 when they were down 6 at the time. And then Brown had a turnover under a minute to go. And like I said, Derek White missed a 3-pointer when the game was already well in hand for Golden State with 39 seconds left. But for me, I've got my thoughts trying to quickly out of the way. I don't understand why. I know they were down 3, so maybe they're trying to tie these things up. But you had plenty of time. There was still just over 4 minutes in the game when you started taking all these threes. Again, they were only down 1 when the first Brown one missed. So I didn't understand. I didn't get why they just decided to, at the end of the game, when they, for the most part, in that third quarter, moving the ball well, they were playing physical like you and I wanted them to do going into this game when we talked about it on Friday, why they decided to revert back to the hero ball thing that we've had, you know, so many problems with them doing early on in the season. It's kind of shown its ugly head at times in the playoffs. And this game, like I said, the last 4 or 5 minute stretch, that's all it was, and was very frustrating to watch because obviously it wasn't working, and you know, they got away from what worked well in the game as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a massively frustrating way to lose the game.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's just making me like internalize things again, because I had kind of gotten in the mindset of, you know, what happened after game 5, and now I'm just mm-hmm. like,
you try to push game 4 to the back of your mind because of how bad it was, the ending. Like,
yeah, it was just, it was a 1-point game and then a 15-3 mm-hmm. run. You're not even going for like the more high percentage scoring opportunities. You're just throwing up threes. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's just undisciplined. And that's just when things started to get a little dicey, in mm-hmm. particular for me, obviously, you know, oh, it's at the end of the game and you're bricking three pointers. But like, when I started to get a little worried about the Celtics, like I was pretty confident for the most part throughout the series through the first, you know, 3.5 games. But this, I don't know, like, especially when it got to that stretch at the end of the game. And then, you know, game five didn't go super well overall, obviously. I don't know. I'm in a different spot with the Celtics, but I'm, you know, as we'll get to, I'm not in the same spot looking forward as you, but it's just like something's off, and it's not one thing, it's multiple things, but it's not a great spot to be in when you, you know, you could have won at least one of these games and been in a better spot, but you squandered things in a variety of ways.
Yep. I mean, that's kind of been, that's what we were hoping didn't happen. I think you and I were both confident that, you know, going into game four, that maybe this was finally the time the Celtics decided to flip the script and win a couple games in a row and take a commanding series lead. And again, game four, a lot of people are saying it. I agree with it. You know, if they go on to lose this series tomorrow night or go on to lose it Sunday night in game seven, game four is the game you have to look back at. And again, say you were up again, I think it was 5 points with like 5 minutes to go, whatever the number might've been, had a lead. And you decided, like I just said, to shoot 7 threes down the stretch when, again, you're moving the ball well. Everything that you did well in game three, even from a physical standpoint, we talked about that. You know, we wanted to see the Celtics, you know, get to the paint more like they did in game three. Points in the paint were huge. Boston outscores Golden State 52-26. They revert back. Golden State outscores them 38-32 with points in the paint. They just seemed like a team that wanted it more. Game four is a game you have to look at and say, if the Celtics had a chance to really turn this series on its head, take a commanding 3-1 lead, you know, you have to obviously win one game at that point. One of those games is going to be at home. They were obviously great on the road all playoffs up until game five. You would have had a great chance to, you know, take the series, win an NBA finals. And now if you can't win one in the next two, or two in the next two rather, game four is going to be a massive, you know, black hole in this playoff run to say, well, you know, you had it and just couldn't, I guess, take it for grabs, or lack of a better term.
Yeah, it's just a tough one to swallow. But game five, if we want to, you know, unless we have any more game four points.
No, game four is, yeah. The only other thing that I was going to talk about for game four reared its ugly head in game five again. So we'll just lump in the whole turnover discussion, which I feel like we're talking about every show with this team, because they still can't seem to get out of their own way when it comes to turnovers. Again, shows up in game five. But I was trying to watch the start of game five at work, was kind of cutting in and out. You had kind of more notes that you can get to, because from what I briefly saw and heard, it was a very ugly, almost like rec league type of shooting performance to start the game for both teams.
Yeah, it was brutal. And the thing that drives me crazy the most about this game outside of the shooting is like Steph Curry wasn't prototypical Steph Curry, and you still lost by 10 points.
Andrew Wiggins.
If I were to have watched that game and not looked at any of the stats throughout, you could have told me Andrew Wiggins had 45 points, and I would have believed you.
Absolutely. He was everywhere. Last two games, he's been phenomenal.
Like, he's showing up when it means the most, you know, so credit to him. I mean, it was just brutal. It was 1 point early in the game. Teams were 3-for-25 combined from three-point range, so nobody was hitting pretty much anything. And specifically, the Celtics were actually hitting nothing.
Quite literally.
Over 11 from three-point range at 1 point. Ended up over 12 to start the game. The most missed threes to start a finals game in 25 years. And turnovers. You clued to it. Turnovers were so bad. Yep. One guy, like, I defend him all the time. I love Jaylen Brown. There's a lot of reasons to praise him. But he was playing like a goddamn maniac in this game. Yep. Like, he would get the ball and try and make a play, but he would like run into two or three defenders, like scramble backwards and try to make these like crazy low percentage passes that some of them worked, but some of them looked stupid. And you can't have that. I've never seen that happen with Jaylen Brown. And I don't know why he picked game five of the NBA finals to do so, but it was just bizarre. This game in the first half in particular was bizarre.
Oh, the Jaylen Brown thing, I mean, I've seen some people listening to Zolak and Bertrand and Felger Mazda, people call in and were not crucifying Jaylen Brown, but there was a lot of flack thrown his way. And it's like the guy before game five, we talked about it, was, I think, a lot of people's odds on if the Celtics would win the finals was an MVP favorite. I think even maybe if he played a little better in game five and they win it again, because Tatum's been so inconsistent, you probably could have said Brown's still a top MVP candidate. But like you said, you know, you asked the question of, you know, why he picked game five to have his worst performance maybe of the season. Because, you know, Jaylen Brown, again, had been nails throughout the playoffs as a whole. To me, going back and watching a little of it, especially the start of the game, you alluded to all the missed threes and stuff. This was a fucking motorcycles.
Once a week.
I know. It's you shouldn't live here for like 5 hours. You'll hear at least 20 motorcycles drive by at 100. It's the worst. Yep, exactly. I think of the South Park episode. Yep. But no, what I was going to say was, I think for maybe the first time all playoffs, you saw the Celtics tense up a little bit in the moment, like knowing maybe that we let game four get away. I think you could accommodate that to all the missed free throws they had. They missed 10 free throws. They lose the game by 10 points. Like, you can't afford to do that. You mentioned the turnovers.
How precisely that lines up.
Yep, that's it. The NBA Finals, just championship games in general, those type of mistakes tend to get magnified and come back to bite you in the ass when you have, you know, such a little margin for error. But yeah, I mean, the turnovers thing too, we talked about that. I'm trying to find it. Was from Boston Sports Info. This was after game four, but again, it works into game five. If you want to update the stat, the Celtics, when the Celtics have less than or equal to 15 turnovers, they are 14-2 in the NBA playoffs as a whole this season. When they have turnovers are greater than or equal to 16, which again, that was in game five, they are now 0-7 in the playoffs. So again, it continues to rear its ugly head. And again, we've talked about it before on this show, off this show. I've talked about it with multiple people. We've all kind of agreed that through most of this game, most of these playoffs, the Celtics, I think, have done a better job of beating themselves than the other teams have. I think a lot of people kind of have come to that agreement that if the Celtics, you know, what stands in the Celtics' way of winning an NBA Finals, it's more so the Celtics themselves than the Golden State Warriors. I mean, you could obviously make a case, again, for Steph Curry just single-handedly beating this team. But for the most part, whenever the Celtics tend to lose, it's because of boneheaded mistakes, like you said, Jaylen Brown. And I'm not just picking on him, but like you said, making passes that you just don't see him try to make because they're just, like you said, such low percentage passes. Marcus Smart, who I think has had a pretty good finals as a whole. I really think there hasn't been a lot to complain about with Marcus Smart. He had a couple of really bad turnovers in game four, like just dumb passes.
I don't understand why NBA players feel the need to make these crazy passes sometimes. Like,
try to get the crowd up flashy. Like,
you're on the road, so that's a little weird if that's the case in this one.
Yep.
Like that pass by Tatum that Rob Williams
to start the game.
I think that was later in the game. Maybe I'm mistaken. Where Rob had to chase Draymond.
Oh yeah, yep.
Blocked it.
And yeah,
Rob
yep.
goes down hard when he already doesn't look healthy when he's out there. He doesn't have like much pop in his stride. Like he just looks limited. Like he looks like he's playing labored.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob has to go balls to the wall to make that play. He goes down hard and he's flexing his arm, like, oh my God, Rob's like
waiting again for another injury. Yep.
Another Rob injury. Like, this is a nightmare. And he absolutely has to just be playing hurt to some extent still, which he has been the whole playoffs. Like, it's just unbelievable that he's played as good as he has with what he's been dealing with. Mm-hmm. My God, like, that Tatum pass was so brutal. And it really was the first game where you could like feel them tensing up, and you know there were some iffy moments too. Like I thought the very clear lane violation on a Jaylen Brown free throw that didn't get called was interesting.
They do that a lot. Sorry to cut you off, but like I've noticed they do that a ton, and it never gets called. It's like traveling. Like they don't really ever call traveling, but like
yeah, like the toe pick that Peyton the second took, and that was a foul. I think it was on Grant Williams. That was stupid.
Yep. How about the flop on Jordan Poole?
Like, locks up Marcus Smart, very clearly flops. You know, there is some contact, but very clearly sells a Montreal Canadiens style. And when he hit the buzzer beater at the end of the third quarter, I wasn't ready, like, in my head to be like, oh, God, it's over. Like,
this game's a massive turning point.
But it was such a bad omen. Like, regardless of the outcome of the game, what it ended up being, which in this case was a loss, it was such a bad omen. I was like, no.
My dad said the same exact thing watching the game.
Of course, you think maybe Poole just goes off in the fourth quarter. That gives him that spark. But for me, it went Steph Curry. I was like, if Steph Curry hits one early in the fourth, he's going to go bananas and put this game out of reach. He didn't really do that. You know, he had a pretty tame game for his standards. But
He had a horrible game for his standards. Like, let's not sugarcoat that either.
Yeah,
like,
I guess so.
Makes that's sense. Where you give Boston credit.
Mm-hmm.
That Andrew Wiggins plays out of his mind. There's some people that think he should kind of pull an Andre Iguodala and swoop in and take the MVP from Steph Curry if Golden State wins this, which I don't know if I necessarily agree with. Like I said, Steph carried that team for the first four games. But that was what was so frustrating again about like last night. Like you said, you erase, you have all this momentum after what was a great third quarter from the Celtics. Again, they put together another good third quarter.
It was a reversal of fortune, like literally from the
Two games in a row.
Percentage and three pointers in particular.
But yeah, I mean, I was the same way. Obviously, after that pool shot goes in, like I said, right now, like my dad, we were sitting there watching. He goes, you watch. That's going to be something that sparks Golden State. That's going to be a really bad, like you said, he didn't say omen, but perfect wording for you. And he thought the same thing too. He's like, this is where Steph Curry now comes out and has a lights out fourth quarter. And again, credit to Boston for making him the focal point. You know, basically, I think Van Gundy said it on the broadcast. The Celtics were basically made the Warriors play 4-on-4. They took Steph Curry out on every play. And like we said, limited him to 16 points. He didn't hit a three, was 0-for-9 the entire game. But then you have the problem of you can't guard Andrew Wiggins. You can't shut him down. You can't stop him from doing anything. Jason Tatum, again, like we want to talk about, I've said it throughout the playoffs, you know, Jason Tatum has ascended to superstardom. I'm ready to take that back if you're going to get shut down by Andrew freaking Wiggins in the NBA Finals. Like, he's a nice player, but he should not be shutting your superstar, all NBA caliber player down. Like, Tatum's got to figure out a way to get around him or something, because it's a bad look if that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and shout out to our boy friend of the program, Chris Blackie, in the chat. I see you. Yeah, it's a tough look, and I always have like the thought in my mind whenever I hear something about Andrew Wiggins or see him, I'm like, you know, this guy was the first overall pick. Like, is he ever going to really reach that elite level? And he's like actually playing like an elite player at the worst time as, you know, a Celtics fan. And exactly. I got to give a shout out to Matt too. He's in the chat as usual. I didn't even look at the live chat until now, but, it says we've been live for 11 minutes. That's not right. Must be a glitch.
Yeah.
But it's just, yeah, it's a huge thing surrounding, you know, what we've talked about Tatum has my series expectations going forward crafted in a certain way. So I don't really have much else to add, and, you know, before we get into, you know, more specifics as you have in the outline here.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing too, talking about Tatum and Brown, and I wanted to ask you, I think a lot of people thought this as well. And again, Ime Udoka is not catching flack for it, but there's some questions about the play of Tatum and Brown in the second half and the fourth quarter, because they played all 12 minutes in the third quarter and they played 10:41 of the fourth quarter. Like I said at the start of the Celtics stuff, Tatum looked gassed in the fourth quarter alone. 1-for-5, had 5 points. I think he had 4 air balls, which is, again, completely unlike him. No rebounds, no assists, no steals, had a turnover. Jaylen Brown had 5 points as well on 1-of-4 shooting. He didn't hit a three, was 0-for-2 from three-pointer, was 0-for-2 from free throw, had no assists, no steals, and 2 turnovers. Like I said, Udoka had some questions, you know, on their play, if he played them a little too much in the fourth quarter. Did you have a problem with Tatum and Brown playing that long for that long of a stretch in the second half? Or are you kind of in the same boat that I was going to get to of he really didn't have anyone else to play? Like, you're trying to mount a comeback. You need your superstars out there. Your bench gave you nothing in that game. That's kind of something moving forward that's going to have to change, obviously. You know, you need more than 10 points out of your bench. Coming out of the second half, your only bench point was a Derek White free throw. He was 1-for-2. Grant Williams, and Peyton Pritchard combined for one whole point at the entire first half. So where are you kind of on the, you know, should they be trying to get Tatum and Brown more rest? Or do you just think at this point, you know, you have to ride those two guys because really nobody else is giving you anything?
I think it just depends game by the situation. Like, you could have said, you know, maybe in the third quarter they don't play all 12 minutes, but the Celtics were battling in the third quarter. Like, they needed Tatum and, you know, their top guys out there as much as possible. You know, again, you can go on the other side of that and be like, maybe not all 12 minutes. You needed them to manage their workload a little bit. But, yeah, I think it just depends, like, situationally. I think it's easier to sit them, especially at this point in the series, if you're, you know, if you got some momentum or if, you know, you got somewhat of a lead. So, you know, things get dicey, you can just bring it back in or, you know, whatever. It's it's very like, it's hard to explain, but I think it just depends on the situation. But I think with the magnitude of where they were at the series, you know, needed their best guys. I get what Udoka did, but I think going forward, it's going to depend, you know, just situation based. It's not the best answer, but I think that's really what it is to me.
I agree with you. It's going to be different game to game. Like I said earlier, you need, and maybe if you're getting more from a guy like Al Horford, I know Marcus Smart had 20 points. So again, I'm not really going to crap on him too much. It comes back to you, like we've talked about, your role players who have been, again, good throughout the playoffs. Derek White had a phenomenal game one. He was the main reason you were able to come back in that game. Peyton Pritchard as well. But those guys have, since really that game, have done little to nothing. Like,
and Grant Williams just,
Grant Williams has not, which is surprising to me. I thought Grant Williams was going to be much more of a factor. Like, I thought he was going to be the Celtics Draymond Green in this series. You know, hit some big shots. Again, I thought more of Draymond Green coming into this than now that we've seen that Draymond Green has become. But yeah, Grant Williams has really been a no-show. You look at his, you know, he's averaging 4.4 points in the playoffs, shooting 33% from deep. Like, that's not, you know, his numbers. 0.6 points, 10, 3, and 3 through the first five games. Like, you need definitely more than one three-pointer out of him. Like I said, Derek White, his numbers have kind of fluctuated. 12, 7, 16, and 1. Peyton Pritchard's numbers have gone down from every final game so far. 8 points in game 1, 4, 3, 1, and nothing in the last game. Like, you need a little bit out of him. But again, that kind of comes down to the situation, like you said. And Pritchard hasn't gotten a ton of minutes the last couple of games. So, you know, maybe the Celtics are straying away from him a little bit. But again, I think if you're going to have to get one of these guys or two of these guys going to stand a little bit more of a chance. And I know Grant Williams has become more of a, you know, a three-point specialist as the season has gone on with the massive steps he's taken. But again, it's kind of going to get into just, you know, what to expect or what you hope to see for the rest of the series. Me personally, you know, he's had some success at times when he's gone into the paint, you know, has been able to cut and catch one, you know, in the paint and then go up for a layup or back guys down. I feel like that's something they should be doing a little bit more with him. And it kind of goes into the same thing I was going to talk about with Robert Williams. Like, these are two guys that you should be able to post up. I know, again, it's not Grant Williams' game for the most part, but like, that's, if you want to get him going, why not try that? You know, again, the Celtics are bigger, more athletic than a lot of the Warriors out there. These, you know, it's two guys I think you should be able to get down low and get going for the most part.
Yeah. That's what makes the whole, like, sitting Tatum and Brown a little more discussion so much tougher, because you haven't got a reliable bench play. So,
exactly. You don't know where the offense is going to come if they go out.
Yeah, and I mean, Tice isn't really an option if you want to use him. Like, Tice is just like,
nope.
The whole morale guy allure is over. He's just not really a huge factor, which hurts. Yeah, it's a tough situation. And, man, I want to be more optimistic than I am for the rest of the series, but it's just like, with them looking so gassed and not being able to capitalize on, you know, Steph not having his best and letting Andrew Wiggins dominate you like he did, it's just not great. But I have faith at the same time in them bouncing back at home. You know, this is your last home game of the year. Like, show something, you know, get some momentum going into a hopeful game 7. And do something with it and, you know, shock the world. But right now it's hard to be optimistic. And of course, with, you know, Al Horford not having his best, you can always count on, I think more so than anyone, like Williams or Pritchard off the bench to step up. You could, you know, get an Al game in game 6 or game 7 or both. And you're in a better spot. You know, Jaylen Brown can relax in the future and not do stupid shit. Tatum, you know,
that would be nice.
Yeah, can keep his stamina up. Maybe he needs to get some potassium in or something in the game. And I think you just got to be better at the free throw line. Like, you got to be better at the free throw line. That, like you said, like, they lost by 10. They missed 10 free throws. Like, that can be a huge difference.
It's not a coincidence.
So it's just a combination of factors. I think they can turn into a winning formula and extend the series, but there's too much uncertainty that I wasn't necessarily expecting right now to be like super optimistic going forward. Cause overall I've been pretty positive,
but haven't had any other reason not to be.
It's a tough spot. It's a really tough spot.
So looking ahead then, as we kind of jump into that and wrap up some Celtics stuff, cause I know there's some hockey stuff that we want to discuss too. you kind of alluded to it, hinted at it a little bit, like you said, that you're not as not pessimistic or, you know, doom and gloom as I might be, but are you thinking there's a chance at a game seven, or are you kind of more so, as I spoil my take, as I just think this is done in six. I think you had your two chances to, you know, kind of put the Warriors away here, definitely in game four. You know, again, game five was it's hit or miss with how that game started, like you said, but I just think now what worried me at the start of this series, if people remember back that are listening, like I was worried that if the Golden State gets a chance to close this thing out, I was talking more so game seven, their championship pedigree is going to shine through. They're going to figure out a way to close things out. They have shown that two games in a row now, game four, game five, crunch time. They're the team that stepped up to the plate. The Celtics were the team that crumbled. Game six, I know I'm with you. Like, I'm holding out hope that maybe the Celtics can show you something at home, but I just think in the end, Golden State, again, if it gets close down the stretch, they're the team that's made all the plays so far. I don't have any reason to think that they're not going to do that again. And I just, if you don't get, like I said to you, at least 40 from Tatum in game six or 30 plus, because you're going to need a like legitimate Tatum performance to take over a game. I just don't think there's a chance the Celtics end up winning or coming out on top. But
yeah, I'm in a little bit of a different camp. I do think they win game six.
Okay. Close or blowout?
I think it's going to be close.
Okay.
But I'm going to have to see something like really epic, or like some aspects throughout to say they win in game seven. I hate the fact that I've gone to this point, but I'm going Warriors in seven. I mean, I think going into the series, I had my doubts about my Celtics in seven pick because, you know, they have to win on the road to clinch it.
Mm-hmm.
But with the recent developments these past couple of games, I just have my doubts about them. You know, regardless of what happens in game six, being able to win another in a row in game seven to close it out because of, you know, how Golden State, particularly in game five, you know, if Steph were to have a down game, Wiggins could step up, or it could be someone different next time. It could be a Jordan Poole game.
Mm-hmm.
Or God forbid you get prime Steph Curry and some Klay Thompson contributions or vice versa, and you're just playing catch up a lot in game six. I'm going Warriors in seven, and I hate it so much. This is the first time I've really doubted the Celtics in so long. I do think they can win it. I'm not giving them like zero chance, but I can't get past Warriors in seven. I think that's where I'm at. I hope to God I'm wrong because championships are fun.
Mm-hmm. You'd like to see one for the Celtics. Hasn't happened in a while.
Doing it against a team with an incredible pedigree in their own barn would be phenomenal. But I'm going Warriors in seven. I hate it so much, but I'm going Warriors in seven.
Mm-hmm. Well, rightfully so, you keep bringing up the bad game for Steph in game five. And that's what scares me too about moving forward in this series is you're not going to get another game. Where, again, he didn't hit a three. I think I still, I can't remember what the tweet was, but he broke his streak of like 150 something, crazy, something ridiculous of three, at least one 3-pointer made in a game or a playoff game, whatever it might've been, or just a streak in general that he broke that the other night with how bad of a performance he had. Like, you're not going to see that again from him. He's the type of guy that is obviously going to put that behind him and said, all right, you know, again, that's what scares me. We have a chance to come out and end this thing in six. I'm going to just go balls to the wall here. There's a lot of people that think, you know, game six Klay is kind of what's been thrown around a lot. You know, maybe some people think Klay Thompson's finally going to have a stamp on this series and put the Celtics away. He, from his post-game comments, seems very excited to get back to Boston. You know, he said, you know, he's never more excited to play a game in Boston than this one. That I think some people have taken as maybe a dig towards Boston or maybe not, I don't know. But like I said, you had so many things, you know, work in your favor at the start, not at the start, but like, again, the big thing is you were able to hold Steph Curry. So you had that in your favor and you blew that opportunity. Like you said, you had Andrew Wiggins step up and play the game of his life. And again, maybe he doesn't do that in game six, but again, I keep going back to you can't expect Steph Curry to have less than 20 points in a closeout game. Like, you're not going to hold him down that long. He's going to figure something out. So like I said, moving forward, that's why you need Jason Tatum to put his stamp on this series. Hasn't done that yet. You're still waiting for the, you know, superstar Jason Tatum. And, you know, my buddy at work said that, you know, when the Celtics had their backs against the wall against Milwaukee, Tatum came out and dropped 40. Maybe he has that in him again. Maybe, like we talked about, that shoulder injury.
Jaylen Brown step up and
– yeah, you know, I mean, I –
need someone to step up or
– exactly.
You know, we've seen when Smart got hurt. Mm-hmm. He would step up. He had that, like, what, 40-point game against the Bucks or something?
Yeah, yep. they wasted that one. So that's what I mean. Like, everything kind of has to come together here. And you have to not, you at this point, you have to, and it's obvious to say, you have to pretty much play mistake-free basketball. And I don't know if they can do that against Golden State with the position they've put themselves in. Brown, I'm not worried about. I think Brown, like, you've seen it enough in the playoffs. If he has a bad game, he's going to come out and respond. It wouldn't surprise me if he comes out. He did it in this series. Comes out and has 12 to 14 points in the first quarter again, because, you know, he knows he played so poorly and put the Celtics in a bad spot in game five. So I'm not worried about him. Again, it all comes down to Tatum. Like, Tatum's a guy that needs to step up, needs to show up and, you know, put his stamp on this game. Maybe he has a 30-plus point game in his pocket that he's saved to this point. I don't know why he would do that. It's not very nice of Jason Tatum to hold 30-point games from us, but you need that. We talked about, you know, Al Horford, you said it. You feel like you're due for an Al Horford game. He's going to have to step up. You know, had 26, obviously, in game one, but has put together 2 points, 11 points, 8 points, and 9 points the last four games. Like, you need more from him. Again, like I talked about, White, Williams, Pritchard, you have to get something from, you know, one or two of those guys to stay afloat. And then for me, again, I've talked about it all series. I said at the start of the series what I thought they should be doing, because they just have such a clear advantage. I would like to see them get Rob Williams more involved. Again, if you've watched the series, if you just watched the Celtics play in general, there really hasn't been anyone who's been able to stop Rob Williams, especially in this series. He's only averaging 7 points per game, but he's shooting 88.9%. Again, you know, some people will look at that and go, oh, well, he's just, you know, getting points in the paint. He's just throwing dunks down. He's getting putbacks. Yeah, because Golden State doesn't have anybody that can stop him from doing that. Exactly. I mean, like,
think of his defense, but he's good at that.
Like, yeah, he's missed two shots all playoffs. Like again, they're layups and dunks, but like, if he's unstoppable down there,
you need a guy in the paint when you're shooting so many threes. Mm-hmm. Like, you have, you know, what Tatum can do. Smart takes a lot of threes, whether they're good decisions or bad. Brown is a good balance. And Payne Pritchard's pretty much exclusively a three-point shooter when he comes off the bench. Williams shoots the three. Horford, he was a big guy, but he shoots the three a good amount. Like, you need a guy that's primarily a guy that plays in the paint, plays tough in the paint, and gets, you know, good offensive rebounds and dunks and stuff like that. And that's what Rob Williams does outside of his defensive game. So it works. Yep. You know, it doesn't work all the time towards wins, but it works, you know, in terms of making him, at least recently, pretty unstoppable, even though he's playing hurt.
Yeah. Yep, I was going to say, he's looked as healthy as he has looked all playoffs these last two games. Like,
he's still got that, like, limited range of motion to him. And he feels like he's just moving a little different. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't look fully comfortable out there.
Yep, but, I mean, that's given with the injury he's had. You said, I mean, the points, getting to the basket and stuff like that, you know, it works from time to time. I don't think it's a coincidence either. It's worked in this series. The Celtics two wins when it comes to points in the paint. Game one, they outscore Golden State 34-26. Game three, we talked about it when we recapped that game. They dominated points in the paint 52-26. Games two, four, and five, all Celtics losses. All games where Golden State has beat the Celtics in points in the paint. 40-24 in game two, 38-32 in game four, 50-36 in game five. Again, that was a lot of Andrew Wiggins just absolutely dominating. And Draymond Green was able to get to the basket a couple of times, you know, work to some of his strengths that, you know, he may or may not have at this point in his career. But again, like, that's the thing too. You mentioned the three-pointer stuff. Like, that's kind of, we've seen this problem come up from the Celtics from time to time, not just this year, but in general. Like, and sometimes when they've played Golden State in the past, like, Golden State's obviously three-point happy, which they can hit three-pointers. You don't have to always answer one of their three-pointers with a three-pointer, especially if it's not like a blowout game. Like, if you have a situation like the third quarter of game four, where you have to try to, you know, knock down a big lead, you have to try to chip away with three-pointers, then you do that. But that was, again, going back to game four, was the problem we both had, is, you know, you were down 2 to 3 points that 5-minute stretch, and you're just chucking up threes when you could chip away with twos and get to the basket, get to the free throw line. You'd like to see them do that more. Like I said, you don't have to answer three-pointers with threes if, you know, the situation doesn't call for it. So hopefully they can, again, get back to what worked well, be physical, be more athletic than the Warriors, because that's what you are. And maybe, like you said, you're holding out hope they force a game seven. Again, anything can happen in game sevens. We've seen it all throughout these playoffs. You know, they've been able to win game sevens at home, win game sevens on the road. Obviously, this one will take a win on the road. But again, I'm just so very worried that Golden State, just, you know, even if Golden State loses game six, I just think, you know, it might be like a little, like, toying with the Celtics factor. Like, yeah, we'll, you know, you got us in game six, but we're going home. Pressure's not on us to win game seven. We're, you know, at home. We're comfortable. We've done it a billion times before. We can do it again. So that's kind of why I'm a little doom and gloom. I said it at the start of the series, like a game seven in Golden State just scares the daylights out of me.
Yeah, I definitely have more optimism about them winning a game seven on the road than I do.
You did.
But, you know, I stand by. I'm not going to act like that was dumb, but there were some concerns about it, no doubt. The thing for me with the Celtics, too, just to wrap it up, like, I feel like throughout the playoffs, but of course it's magnified more in the finals, they make up their mind too quickly what they want to do offensively. Like, just slow the game down a little bit sometimes. Like, it's just brutal. And this is coming from somebody who, you know, isn't the biggest, you know, basketball expert. Don't know coaching experience. Like, not a huge watcher of the game. But, like, I feel like sometimes they rush things. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, the shot clock isn't, like, 10 seconds. Like, you have more time to work. Like, maybe it's just the style and how they want to attack. But obviously is that to some extent, but I think they got to switch it up and just sometimes just play a little more patient. Like, sure, you can go for an open look if you have it, or, you know, sometimes they do force things and, you know, make these stupid passes like Jaylen Brown did at times, but some of it is clock management too. Like, you don't have to just manage the clock at the end of the, you know, first half or the end of a quarter or end of the game. Like, seconds, like, time just matters throughout the game. Like, you don't have to, if you're throwing up a three quick, like, every time, or a quick jump shot, like, you're giving Golden State not a lot to worry about on defense. You know, you worry about the shot, but you don't have to, like, make them play as much defense. And I just, I want them to play simpler basketball and make more high percentage passes. Like, just
absolutely
settle down a little bit, loosen up at home. You know, they were getting tense in game five, I think, and you can win this, but more so, I'm just coming back, like I said, to the point, Warriors in seven, but I hope to God I'm wrong, because I think they can do it, but I just don't know. I'm leaning towards the Warriors pulling it off, so.
Which is
unfortunately where I'm at, which sucks, because it's been a fun year. It's been such a, you know, a rally cry of a year since January, and, you know, the energy shifted, like Jaylen Brown said, but it's a really tough hole to come out of against a team with such a pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, well, we've talked about that before, too. It's not like that they don't deserve an NBA final or a championship. But like you said, like, the way the season has unfolded with, you know, the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, like, you'd like them to be able to finish this thing off, you know, have an epic finish to what was an epic turnaround. And if it, like, again, we talked about this a couple episodes back. I think I asked you the question, you know, if they were to lose the finals, you know, would it be a failure of a season? And you and I both agreed no, because like you said, throughout, they were the 11th seed going into January. Like, they were dead in the water. We both thought, you know, this team has, you know, nothing of value to talk about, you know, to even look into. And, you know, obviously had a great turnaround and everything. So again, it's not a failure if they don't end up winning the finals. I think you could maybe ask the question, you know, how they went about things, you know, that you could maybe sprinkle in the, you know, the failure discussion there, or, you know, I think disappointment's probably a better word, especially like we said, how game four ended, where you, again, we're 5 minutes away from a 3-1 series lead. But again, I've seen that kind of discussion start creeping back up. You know, would this be a failure if the Celtics can't end up winning this thing? Again, no. The chips were stacked against you throughout the season. Again, that you were the 11th seed. Even going into this series, like, there were a lot of people that maybe thought the Celtics were favorites. They were, I think, for a lot of betting people. But like you said, you know, you're going up against a team that is championship pedigree, you know, has been the pinnacle of the NBA for the last decade. Like, that's not to take them to a 7-game series, if you can do that, I wouldn't consider that a failure in the slightest.
Yeah, it's a failure given the sense that, like, you had an opportunity, you had opportunities to
exactly
these games, and you let them slip away in different ways. But in terms of the season as a whole, no, it's just not a failure. That's it's a crazy thing to say in my eyes, but I don't know. I hope we're talking about a success with, you know, a game seven victory next show and how we're celebrating. So,
yep.
We hope we are wrong, very much.
That would be nice. I've been wrong a lot. I should just go with how I usually do when it comes to predictions and bet on the, like I just did, bet on the Warriors to win, because the Celtics have pretty much proved me wrong all season. So hopefully they can pull that out one more time. And like you said, we'll be celebrating come next Wednesday.
Still love and trust, but, you know, it's just a tough situation.
It's a little less now than it was before.
Yeah. On to Bruins and some Stanley Cup finals talk towards the end of the hockey segment. Before we get into the nitty gritty, it is June 15th, the 11-year anniversary of the greatest day of my life. June 15th, 2011, the day the Bruins beat the Vancouver Canucks in game 7 4-0. And that was just wonderful. Just a great day, the one that I'll never forget, the greatest day of my life to this day. Happy June 15th to everybody out there. Happy June 15th to you.
Yep, as to you.
Hopefully with that kind of mojo, you know, this is a big day in Boston sports history. Maybe the Bruins can get off to, or the Celtics can get off to a good start tomorrow and ride the mojo, but we'll see what happens there. But the biggest news, 2 hours less than a week to the exact minute later.
You think that's a coincidence?
Ty Anderson brought it up 6 days, 22 hours later. Bruce Cassidy hired. Who would have thunk it? Teams want good coaches when they're
surprisingly available. Crazy. They don't last long when they get shit canned in the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't in this event. And Philly, just real quick side note, they are nearing a deal with John Tortorella, which is so funny.
Oh, that's
I thought that was a joke when I saw that earlier. That's a bad move.
Prime Philly. Chuck Fletcher loves, you know, bonehead players, and he signed Russ Grisalainen to this contract extension. You know, I think for years it's just been trying to get back to the Broad Street Bullies, and it's not working. And now they're going to bring Tortorella for toughness and reputation, and now he's going to just
such a bad move.
Mentally scar the minds of, like, any young player he chooses, potentially, which is got to just terrify Flyers fans. Oh, but it's real hilarious. Quick. It's hilarious. This is, the fit is hilarious. It really isn't. Is.
I might be mistaken, so apologies if I am, but was it last year, a year or two ago, Carter Hart, didn't he have, like, I thought he had to get like a not life coach, but like a I thought I heard a report like therapist. Again, I might be wrong. Wasn't that report out there? That, like, not like he was like having like any sort of like mental issues or anything, but like, I thought there was some kind of report, like the wear and tear of the season was on him or something. And that's why he was struggling a couple years back. So like you just said, why bring in a guy like John Tortorella who has the, not like that kind of reputation around him, but like not the greatest guy on the planet. Like that just seems like a disaster waiting to happen with that organization.
Yeah. It's just Chuck Fletcher is an idiot. Like he's so bad at running this team. And yeah, I did look it up. I'm glad you mentioned this, 'cause I kind of, forgot about it, but yeah, he had spent some time with psychologist and confidant John Stevenson. He's a sports psychologist. So, yeah.
I couldn't think of the word that made it not seem great. Like.
I mean, I don't know if you're – I don't know how if you're a player, you're, like, cool with this in the Flyers.
Because I can't imagine a lot of guys are.
They don't have that voice in Claude Giroux anymore unless, you know, the thing some people were speculating about when he got traded, like, oh, he's just going to re-sign with the Flyers again, which could happen, but I kind of doubt it. Maybe if he was there, he'd be like, all right, like, no. I don't know what he thinks about John Tortorella, but Cam Atkinson's got some history with John Tortorella. I think it's pretty good. Like, I don't think they had any problems, but I don't know. I'm not, you know, in the locker room. I don't remember any, like, stories coming out about them not liking each other, but I don't know. Maybe I'm on the flip side. Maybe I'm just misremembering having a brain fart. Maybe that was part of the reason he was traded from Columbus, but I don't even think, no, Tortorella wasn't even there when he was there. I don't know. I'm confusing myself here. I'm thinking it, but
put your brain in a pretzel.
Yeah, putting my own brain in a pretzel. It would just be a funny fit. I mean, poor Flyers fans, but like, you know me, I'm not a huge fan of Philly and their team, so, you know, whatever. But it would just be hilarious to monitor. It would, because I truly can't believe that John Tortorella is still even getting consideration for jobs.
I know, right? Like, that's
what's so broken about the NHL. These guys that suck at their jobs and get fired and have these things that come out about them. You think they would just be out of the loop. Like, nobody wants to hire him again, but nope.
He's the type of guy that just strikes me as, like, the league has, like, is, like, leaps and bounds past him. Like, his coaching days are, so, like, better coaching days are so far behind him. Like,
yeah.
And then, just, again, I'm with you. The hire, again, when I first saw it, I thought it was, like, a joke that, like, oh, the Flyers are considering John Tortorella. Ha, ha, ha. Like, it would never work. Yeah. And that's insane. Part of me was hoping Bruce Cassidy ended up there just to, you know, watch the Flyers come in and, you know, get the chance to kick the Bruins' asses and just
– it's going
to
be tough no matter who
– prod the Bruins a little more, but
– yeah, there's been some reports from different sources, including Kevin Weeks. But I don't think it's it. I'm going to check their Twitter right now. I don't think it's
not officially official yet.
Yeah, but it certainly seems to be trending that way. Multiple sources backing it up. No, nothing from them yet on an announcement. But I mean, it would just be so Flyers. It would be trying to channel the Broad Street Bullies and bring them back.
Maybe over under how many years he works out there?
Under two, easily. Okay. Maybe under 1.5.
I was going to say under two for sure.
But like, it's not going to work. And I'd be in a little different spot if they had Claude Giroux, but they don't. Like, they don't have a clear leader on this team right now.
It's a fairly young team, isn't it?
It is a fairly young team, too.
Yeah, it's not going to – I think back to the same thing. Again, I don't want to cross sports, but when the White Sox hired Tony La Russa, it's like, why are you hiring a guy that's an ancient guy with super young team that, like, I mean, I don't know if – I don't obviously watch a lot of Flyers games, know if they're, like, a super, like, young, energetic, like – team like the White Sox were when they hired La Russa, and look how that's worked out for them now. They're one of the biggest, you know, letdowns of baseball this year. Like, I feel like the Flyers could be heading for a very similar, not that the Flyers, I feel like I'm probably going to be picked to win a ton next year, but this just, again, screams like a disaster hire in the making.
It does. It absolutely does. And speaking of hockey related things, Colorado strikes first. Gabriel Landeskog, the captain. Bowen Byram takes the neutral zone over to Rantanen, is that? And squeaks through, and Landeskog just, wow, that was a little soft one for Vasilevsky. A little soft one. Landeskog taps it as he's almost being folded in half. Brandon Hagel is playing. Braden Point is playing. Brandon Hagel was sort of like a game time decision. To some extent, Braden Point was, I think a couple hours ago, announced to be in the lineup. But Colorado strikes first. That pretty much wraps up like the Tortorella stuff. It's just going to be funny to see how that works out. But yeah, Bruce Cassidy to the Vegas Golden Knights. One of the early speculated fits when he was fired. It makes a lot of sense. I was leaning towards, you know, my first instinct was going to be Vegas or Detroit, with, you know, Stevie Y being a savvy GM, him trying to bring in Cassidy. But at the same time, with all these different sources of speculation about his relationship with young players, do you want a guy like him? Or Barry Trotz, who's, you know, a little bit more defensive styled, with guys like Moritz Seider and Lucas Raymond and a litany of other young players they're going to have coming up. Sebastian Kosa someday, you know, they've got some good prospects coming up too. They're trying to get Joe Valeno established. Do you want that? I don't know. I guess not enough. Maybe Vegas just had a strong push and they sold him pretty quickly. It certainly looks that way.
Seems that way.
Yeah, because you know, things were raw at the start for Cassidy, but he found a good turnaround, and he's hanging out with a former Bruins personality in a different sense, you know, than being a coach, and Dave Gosher. They were hanging out just yucking it up. There's a picture out there. I think Petrov and Guire tweeted it out. I miss them both dearly, and knowing Dave Gosher personally through sports broadcasting him growing up, I miss him a lot because he's truly one of the nicest people I've ever met. He really, really is. Pierre LeBrun, interesting note. One thing that seems to be complicating the Stars coaching hire process is coaching candidates wanting to know where the future lies with GM Jim Nill, who has one more year left on his deal. The GM coach relationship is key, and coaching candidates will want to know if Nill will be around. Kind of a similar situation to Cassidy, even though, you know, Cassidy doesn't have a contract right now. Colorado again. Vasilevsky. But I think pretty much in the playoffs, Tampa's kind of struggled in game ones. So
seems like it. I mean, that's how the Rangers series went. Give them two and then shut them down for four straight.
Toronto won game one, too. They won like 5-1. So,
They blew them out, if I remember correctly. Not really
changing my mind too much about Tampa, but this is their toughest test of the playoffs so far. It's a little different situation with, you know, comparing Dallas and Boston with GMs, you know, because Sweeney, we can assume, is going to get a contract announced, but he hasn't yet. And with the coaching situation in Dallas, you know, Rick Bowness wasn't fired. He stepped down. Cassidy was fired. So it's a little different in some aspects, but maybe some comparables you can draw to the Bruins situation. You know, talking about Don Sweeney, Flutish and Zawa put this out. It's just some polls to survey the fans and see where they are with the team. I assume expecting, you know, he's been pretty critical of the Bruins. And for a guy, I think that's fairly quiet overall, you know, has spoken his mind quite, you know, more boisterously than he has in the past, I'd say. Mm-hmm. I don't listen to a ton of Fluto's audio content. I know he does like live Q&As a lot on The Athletic, but I don't know. I just don't feel like this is, we haven't quite seen Fluto like this, and it's interesting. So he put this article out with some polls, and Scott McLaughlin had asked the question when Sweeney had his press conference. He asked about fans who don't have faith in the front office. He said that was a generalization and asked for specifics. So Fluto eventually put this out. The survey was of 2,500 fans or somewhere around there, and 91.4% said Sweeney and Neely are not the right executives to lead the Bruins. So we'll run through these real quick. The first one, should Cassidy have been fired? It says 82.6% no from fans, 17.4% yes. We are both on the no. I don't even have to ask you. Did Cassidy do his job well? I think I can answer your part of it as well. 95.8% said yes. He did a good job. And 4.2% said no. And, of course, Cassidy said he felt like he did his job, and he did. So it's a reasonable thing to say.
Yeah.
Of the following candidates, who would you prefer to see as the next Bruins coach? I'm not going to ask you on the spot to name like your top five, but if you want,
I was going to say I don't know enough about any of them. So
Jay Leach.
Well, we know one of them's out of there. Sorry to cut Jay you off, Leach. But we know one of them's out.
Yeah, we definitely do. Jay Leach, number one in this poll, 49.7%. Barry Trotz, 25.3%. David Quinn, 15.1%. John Tortorella, 6.5%. That's way too much. and Mike Babcock with 3.5%.
That'd be a mistake, too.
I am in the camp of Jay Leach of these five candidates, too. But, you know, I would be very cool with Barry Trotz. I feel like we'd probably have the same top five here. Like, I'd be the same way as the fan vote, and I imagine you would be, too, unless you have
any differences in
opinion. My God, though, I would truly not be okay with it at all if they hired Mike Babcock. I'm just, no.
That'd be another horrible decision. Like, you'd follow in the footsteps of the Tortorella signing.
That's another guy, dude, like, that just shouldn't coach. Like, he just
past his prime, league has moved on. Like, come on. Stay away.
You can find better people. Like, God damn it.
It's as simple as that.
Are Neely and Sweeney the right executives to lead the Bruins? 88.6% said yes. Stupidly. And 91.4% said no. Pretty overwhelming number there. Is this organization headed in the right direction? 7.8% said yes. That's crazy to me.
No way.
I mean, even if you're optimistic about like Sweeney being able to, you know, make some good moves and, you know, it not being a complete disaster, how can you say they're heading in the right direction? We're like,
they're treading water at best. They're
treading water, and Patrice Bergeron is not guaranteed to come back. Brad Marchand could retire in like 3 or 4 years, maybe sooner, God forbid, whatever happens.
The hips don't hold up,
David Pastrnak could somehow not want to sign. Like, this, they're not heading in the right direction. They can do as much as they want to soften the blow, but things are going to get bad at some point. They can't just tread water forever. It's just not sustainable. Could the Bruins have won the Stanley Cup in 2021-2022?
No.
I am surprised that there was 20.2% of people said yes.
Me too. Some diehard fans that are clinging on to hope for that one.
That's crazy to me because, like, I had faith that things would go better overall with the center situation in particular, but a big thing, big worry for me was the second pair. I just don't know how you can, with two new goalies in the mix, two in the playoffs, I don't know how you could have said the Bruins with a straight face were going to win the Stanley Cup this year. They just, like, it would have taken a really spectacular run. And if they ran into Colorado right now, they'd be done in five games max, I think. Like,
I said that the other day. I'm like, they would lose that series in three. Anybody that came out of the West, a couple of games that I briefly watched, just the style of play being so different. Like, they would have had a chance against anyone that came out of the Western Conference. Like,
well,
I don't know.
Every team, like, they could have beaten Dallas. They could have beaten LA. Like,
That's fair. I should have said the final like four-ish teams that were around. Like, no, I think I said it too when we did the preview at the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, I think the only thing I was clinging on to hope to was if they kind of had the rah-rah rally around Bergeron. If, you know, if this is Bergeron's last year, let's have him go out a Stanley Cup winner for the second time in his career. And then that might propel him to the Cup finals. But other than that, like from just a talent standpoint, like no way this team had enough talent to get out of the Eastern Conference as a whole. Like,
Like I had them losing in the Eastern Conference Finals, which was a little ambitious, but I just felt like it was going to happen. But they just weren't winning the Cup this year. They weren't going to do it. I know it's easy, it's easy to say in retrospect. But in the right direction too. Like Grizzlick, McAvoy, and Marchand are all out to start the season. And two of those guys are, like, your top three or four most important players on the team. Like, they're not headed in the right direction. They're going to struggle out of the gate. They're not headed in the right direction. You can't say that unless you have blind optimism. Like, that's crazy to me. This is where things get a little interesting. Well, it's been interesting, but this one in a different sense. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more divided. Will the Bruins make the playoffs in 2022-23? 48% said yes.
Again, what team are you looking at?
I think a lot of those people are probably the ones that think they're good enough to cling on to the second wild card spot.
Okay. I'm not one of those people.
Certain roster construction things, who can stay healthy, how they come out of the tough stretch at the start of the season, whatever.
Okay.
I don't think this team's making the playoffs.
No, I don't see it either. Sitting here today, no way.
Nope. I can't say they will. It's one of the more dicey years of my life. I could, being a diehard Bruins fan, diehard hockey fan, saying like I've never been this uncertain, like at least for a long time, about them making the playoffs. So 52% saying no.
Even if they didn't have these injuries, you still have the uncertainty of, how is this team going to respond to a new coach?
Yeah.
Like maybe they get out of the gate and just teams
being better or worse around you.
That too. Like you obviously have the whole offseason for teams to build up and be better. Like, so I mean, even if they weren't all these injuries, I don't know if I'd make them a playoff team without the injuries to start next season.
Like, yeah, it's hard.
Like,
I just think
there's so much uncertainty with this team.
Yeah, it's way too much. Mm-hmm. Should the Bruins rebuild immediately? 52.3 said yes. 47.7 said no. I think this one is a lot of people, it's just like based on context, what they think of as a rebuild. I don't think everybody who voted in this is thinking, oh, like tear it down, like trade Pastrnak, trade Marchand, like whatever. But I'm in the camp of, I don't remember what I said when I filled out the poll, but I'm cool with a rebuild on the fly because I think they have enough in place.
That's what they have to do.
You got to rebuild on the fly. You don't tear this down. You don't trade Pastrnak. Pastrnak is a guy you build around, not a guy you trade unless, he's not going to sign. If you get to that doomsday scenario, then you trade him. But you don't trade Pastrnak. You don't rebuild fully. It diminishes the value of these moves where you're keeping Hall around for a little while. You make this long-term commitment to Lindholm. You got Brandon Carlo and Charlie McAvoy at the start of new deals. You got a huge party, like your top seven defensemen are all locked in already. Like you can't do it. You got a young goalie in Swayman coming into his own. You got Ullmark for three more seasons. Like you can't tear it down. Like
no.
it's not feasible. And speaking of things that aren't feasible, as we're going to get to in our player predictions, Nick Paul, 2-1, Tampa Bay scores. The Ottawa Senator scoring a weird one. That was a weird goal. But we had a high scoring affair a little bit early on. I think this one requires context, but it was interesting to see majority saying yes.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I wanted to say, because you brought up potentially, if a rebuild, because if I see rebuild, I think too, like up to everything goes, like you blow it up completely, but then you said like you Pastrnak's a guy you build around. I think. And again, this goes back to the asset management and the drafting and everything. Like if you had a legitimate like guy in the pipeline that was like, okay, this guy's going to be a stud when he gets up here. Like, that's a guy you could build around. Then maybe you have a better feeling of trading Pastrnak because you know there's a guy that's up and coming that, okay, this is the guy of the future of the team that you're going to build around. Like, yeah, there's some guys that you've talked about in the past that, you know, have played well in Providence. You know, there's some guys they drafted in the last couple of years. Lysell that might turn into something. But again, you just don't know that. And again, with the track record of Sweeney's drafting, like, you might sit more towards the negative side of like, okay, this is another guy that might not pan out. So, like, I'm with you. I don't think you can, like, really blow things up, rebuild, just because you just don't – you don't have enough to, you know, kind of fill the gaps if you do that.
Yeah, there's too much of the next wave, or what you hope is the next wave, in place to just rebuild. But, yeah, rebuild on the fly, we're both in that camp. And that's regardless of what happens with Bergeron, which moves us into the next part of the poll.
Very surprised by this number.
41.9% say yes, 58.1% say no.
I would have thought that would be flips, to be honest.
I am more so in the yes camp than I have been in recent months. I'm like,
okay,
I'd say like 52% yes, 48% no. I do think something that's gone under wraps a little bit, obviously, you know, it's an injury he had to take care of, but I kind of wonder if Bergeron getting surgery on his shoulder, is a good omen for, like, he's getting it because he wants it to be good for next season.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, at the time, it still might not be made up. Like, his decision's not made. Like,
no.
I think that's fair to say. Of course, you know, we don't know all the specifics. We're not, you know, in Bergeron's camp. But it was a little, I thought it'd be like a 51-49 type of thing. Like,
yeah, really closer and more, yeah, towards the yes side than the no.
But I think, you know, on top of the retirement, people have the thing now where will Bergeron want to come back to this? I think Bergeron, which helps my yes case, you know, this is a tough situation for him to come back in, especially when he's had surgery in the offseason, something that's been lingering from anywhere from like 2 to 5 years, the reports are saying. I think he knows what his role is as captain. He knows, you know, he's coming off a Selke season, for Christ's sakes. Mm-hmm. And he knows that the team will need him. Like, he's not going to be able to, like, make them this sub-team out of the gate with all these injuries, or, you know, they're probably going to struggle regardless whether he comes back to some extent. But I think for one more year, he's going to come back. And I think he just knows what his value is. He knows how good he is. And, you know, the surgery thing could go either way. You know, I'm not saying, like, this is the reason Bergeron's coming back. Like, he got surgery. He's coming back. He wants to be ready. He wants to get that elbow taken care of, to, you know, play better and not linger, which, you know, could be part of it, but not the whole thing. But it's not, like, going to sway my opinion either way. I'm leaning towards him coming back. And I'm a little bit surprised the poll wasn't a little closer.
Yeah, same. I think even I don't know if he's the type of guy that, like, is like obviously just wants to try it out, but like I feel like maybe the prospects of a new head coach would kind of sway him to like, all right, maybe I'll come back and try this out and see if we can maybe get something we didn't have last year. But
too, like, he as the leader, like, does he want to leave his teammates in the dust with the new coach
without
a new captain? You know, not to say Marshawn. I think Marshawn will be the next captain when Bergeron retires. Some people think McAvoy, but I'm going Marshawn.
I've heard, a lot of McAvoy.
Like, does he want to leave them to just, you know, not have his voice? Because it was an adjustment when Chara moved on. Now, you know, Bergeron's had to take on the burden of being captain, which, you know, I think he's handled gracefully. Does he want to leave them in that spot with a new coach? I think he's definitely going to and has probably been part of the search with them. You know, they've been consulting him and the process here. But, I'm in the Bergeron stays camp right now.
Nope, same.
Nice, nice. Will Krejci return?
No.
70% say yes, 83% say no. This is about what I would have expected.
I thought this would be closer just on the optimism side of things. Like,
it'd be different if,
like, a 60-40 split
didn't come out too with him.
That too. Yep.
Given the smirk. I'm going 30 for my personal belief. I'm going 30-20 or 30-70 yes. Which are 30-70. Yeah, with the 30 being yes, the 70 being no. But it's 17-83 here. I don't know. It's just with the cap, they'd have to make some cap cap moves to accommodate him once, you know, Marchand comes off the long-term IR, which he'll be placed on, and McAvoy and maybe Grizzlick. You'll have to be able to, you know, accommodate their salaries when they come off, and you'll have to make some moves. I just don't know if it's going to work. They'd have to move on from, like, Craig Smith, like, buyout Nick
Foligno. Wouldn't hate that.
Yeah. I think there's still a chance DeBrusk and Riley get traded, or one of those two, even with Riley's injury. And, you know, 2.5 month recovery time left at this point. I don't know. I'm holding out hope. I have it at 30% because I do think if, you know, there's all this speculation out there about certain players not getting along with Cassidy. I think Krejci is one of those guys that didn't get along with Cassidy because those comments he put out were pretty pointed at Cassidy about not getting to play with Pastrnak. Like, why couldn't that have happened for me more? I don't get the sense that Krejci was a huge fan of Cassidy, and I imagine that had to have factored into a little bit outside of wanting to be with his family and, you know, just kind of relax for a little bit because I assume playing in the Czech Republic is a lot less strenuous than playing in the NHL. Factored into his decision. But that could, you know, that's part of the reason why I'm at 30% yes, because I think Krejci could want to come back if they could make it work. And Pastrnak is a good guy to recruit him.
I was going to say, just off of the Bergeron point I had about, you know, maybe wanting to come back and see what, you know, what a new coach would be like. I thought Krejci was going to be the complete opposite. That's why I was kind of leaning towards it. I don't think he was going to come back because I didn't think he'd want to, you know, now I have to come back and try to accommodate a new coach and again, moving everything back. Yeah,
that's
but
the thing too.
That's interesting that you think he wasn't one of, you know, like, or was one of the guys that wasn't too high on Cassidy. So maybe he would want to. Okay. So maybe that would sway him to come back more, but.
But I think it's speculation with reason. I'm not just throwing shit at a wall. You know, I kind of am, but I think those comments were pointed at Cassidy to some extent that he made during the season. I think just like December or January, he made those comments. But they'd have to make it work the cap and, you know, what Krejci, you know, his playing time and, or who, more so who he'd be playing with. And of course, you know, if Bergeron's not around, he has to take on a bigger role or maybe he would want that, you know, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
A scenario that Bergeron isn't there, like him and Bergeron have a great relationship. But, I mean, the idea of him, like if Bergeron wasn't around playing with like Marchand and Pastrnak would be fun, I imagine. So,
well, I was going to say too, is you just talked about, you know, maybe McAvoy, maybe Marchand for the captain. I think if Bergeron's gone and Krejci comes back, I think you have a very easy decision on who you name the captain in that sense. So maybe that might sway Krejci to come back.
That is something I didn't think of.
No.
If Bergeron retires, if that's part of their pitch to Krejci, you'd be captain.
That might entice him to come back for a year or two.
Damn, I didn't even think of that.
Gives McAvoy more chance, more time to, not that he's not a leader to begin with, but like, or now at this point in his career, but would give him a couple
Marchand
more years to.
Like, I
don't think so.
I think Marchand could care less. He was part of the friggin' prank when they gave Cat.
Yeah.
Bergeron the captainship of that whole thing with, you know, Marchie being named captain.
But all the shit he pulls too, I mean, we've talked about it plenty of times, but I feel like in the back of Marchand's mind, he might know that, like, I'm probably not the best guy to be captain. Like,
in a way, yeah, more like a joking sense. But
yeah,
I do think if Bergeron retires and Krejci doesn't come back, Marchand is the best fit to be captain of this team. Will Pastrnak resign? Yes. I mean,
I think so.
I really don't see Pastrnak wanting to leave. I really don't see it.
If Sweeney's still here?
Yeah. I don't know. We don't really know like super specifics about that. He, you know, his agent has come on and said, you know, they have a good relationship with Sweeney too. So you can believe what you want, but I'm in the camp where there's enough reason for Pastrnak to stay and he likes it here. And I mean, the guy was out having beers and partying with Lindholm in Sweden. Like, he's acclimating a new team.
I think he's good, like, yeah.
I think he's staying. Like, I think David Pastrnak is staying. And, you know, they're not going to get him for that super reasonable deal, but maybe they get him for a little bit under market value. But either way, they're gonna sign Pastrnak, I think. And it's going to be a goddamn shame if they don't. Like, a real travesty. Colorado, speaking of high-scoring affair, power play goal.
Nice.
Did they say two-minute advantage? Yeah, I think Cirelli and Sergachev both in the box.
Nice.
Not great. Should the Bruins trade DeBrusk? Yes.
Yep.
I like Jake DeBrusk more so than I did at points during the season. And he's scoring, you know, especially if you can keep – if Bergeron stays and he stays in the top line and plays pretty good, you know, when Bergeron and Marchand are reunited when Marchand comes back, mm-hmm. you have a potential 25-goal scorer. But with the trade request and with, you know, his $4 million in salary, which is pretty reasonable if he were to be a 25-goal scorer off the books, John Cooper is freaking out on the bench. You got to sell high on DeBrusk.
I think so.
You have to. Like, there's no guarantee this continues, this point production we saw after the trade deadline in particular.
Mm-hmm.
You got to sell high. You have to. And it was 51.3% yes to 48.7% no, which is interesting.
Like Flutel has in the article, I'm too curious if his mindset had changed following Cassidy getting fired. But I'm with you. I just think that, you know, you have to get the most that you can for him, because again, you don't know if he's going to put up this type of production that he, or the stretch that he ran or went on last year. Like, you have to get rid of it while, you know, he's at his highest, what's the word I'm looking for? His highest value.
Yeah. You got to, at this point, it stinks, but you know, it's just where you're kind of at. And, luckily with their cap situation, DeBrusk won't have to worry about being traded to Vegas and being with Cassidy. Yep. So, mm-hmm. unless they were to get really creative over there, that would just be crazy, but that'll never happen. Yeah, I don't know. The DeBrusk thing with him playing better later in the season makes it kind of tough to trade him, but it also makes it easier because his trade value is higher. So, and there's no guarantee if DeBrusk, you know, sees this new coach, he's like, oh my God, I want to play for this guy. He could just be like, yeah, I still want out. I kind of burned the bridge a little bit, and I still want out. So, we shall see what happens there, but I'm leaning towards DeBrusk being traded still. If the Bruins traded a defenseman this offseason, who would you prefer they move? Mike Riley was number one at 47.7, Matt Grizzlick at 31.7, Jakub Zboril at 10.4. Don't know why people really want to trade Zboril.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Confuses me. And Derek Forbert at 10.2%. I don't know if you're trading Derek Forbert with that no-trade clause and how he played the playoffs. I don't really want to trade Derek Forbert. Mike Riley at the top makes sense. We'll see what the injury does to his trade value and how, you know, things go down in the offseason. But I think if there's any guy to be moved, it's got to be Mike Riley, and it most likely will be Mike Riley. Because
you could
say the same thing, you know, like Grizzlick's a better defenseman, but they're both dealing with injuries.
Was just going to say that.
Timeline is longer.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say you could probably get more for Grizzlick, but Riley in the long run makes the most sense.
100%, which in this case kind of reflects poorly on Sweeney, because you're
potentially
training a guy that you gave a 3-year extension to off of one playoff run that didn't go how you wanted.
Big brain move for Don Sweeney again.
Yeah. Will Frederick and Sidney could be top 9 forwards next year. 34.5% yes. 69.5. Nice and a half said no. Look, I don't think Jack Sidney is of a regular NHL forward on this team. And with the injuries, you know, maybe they give him a shot, but there's too much baby deer there. He put all this weight on in the offseason with Bulk Nika. And then they updated the weights and like
didn't work out, did it?
He lost all of that weight. Like, what are you doing, dude? Like, what's going on here? And you know, maybe they give him more of a shot with a new coach. Maybe Cassidy, you know, wasn't huge on playing Sadnika, but I think Cassidy's comments he made of, you know, when you have a team like this and kind of sent a shot at Sweeney at this, like, you don't really a team that's contending and a team that's deep. Maybe not deep in the best way, but deep in like NHL caliber forwards, guys that make enough money to be on the NHL roster. Mm-hmm. You don't really have room for guys like Stanika unless they're breaking through. So with the new coach, maybe they put an emphasis on Stanika, at least starting on the fourth line at center or on the wing. But I don't see it. I don't see it with Stanika. I really don't. There's not enough consistent impact when he does play. You know, that could change with some offseason preparation and maybe a different mindset without Cassidy. You know, maybe he wasn't the biggest fan of Cassidy. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine he's got super glowing positive reviews given the fact that he didn't play that much. But I just don't see it with Stanika. I don't think he's a consistent enough impact guy. And if it works out, it's, you know, maybe it's here, you know, like I said, with a new coach, maybe he thrives. But I just don't see it. I don't see him being a consistent guy. He doesn't have good finishing when he's up here. He does good enough in the AHL, but that's just not enough. And Trent Frederick is an enigma. So, like,
you say they both are.
Yeah, but Trent Frederick in a different way.
Frederick, yeah, more so from an NHL level standpoint.
Yeah, I don't know with Frederick. I truly don't know what to expect on a game by game basis with him anymore.
I don't think they do either.
For a while, but things were fairly comfortable at different points throughout the season when he was playing good, especially when the third line got going. But I'm going to say Frederick, but not Stanika.
Yeah, I'd probably lean that way too. I mean, if you can make a case for both, you're probably going to, like, you might need to lean on these guys with the injuries that they have, especially if Sweeney screws up another offseason when it comes to signing guys. Like I said last week, I think you could very well see him just plug holes with another bunch of fourth and third line bums. So maybe you'd want to see guys like Frederick and Sneeka that you maybe know a little bit more about than free agents you bring in. So it wouldn't surprise me.
Room in free agency. Too. That's
true. Like, yeah, cap wide. Yeah,
this year.
That's good point. I think you brought that up last show too. Season. Yep. So that's a fair point.
Of signing Nosek and Howlas and Foligno's like.
So yeah, maybe in that case, then yeah, I think maybe I might change my answer to yes then, because again, I think with the injuries you have, you obviously guys are going to have to shift up in the lineup.
Bergeron and Krejci.
Exactly. Yep. That too. So I think at some point, just out of necessity, you're probably going to see both guys crack the top nine at some point.
I think
whether you like it or not,
with Bergeron and or Krejci back, and you having Howla, unless Howla were to move to the wing, and Coyle, I think it'd be a wing thing for Stanika. I just, if anything, I think if he's going to succeed, it's going to be as a wing. So I'll say that. Whether it's here or somewhere else, Stanika might not even be on the team.
Wouldn't hate that. Traded.
It's possible. Not counting on it, but it could happen. It's a weird situation, but we'll see. I'll say this too, unless John Beecher really struggles, I'd rather see John Beecher on the third line on opening night than Trent Frederick. So that might be kind of rushing him, but I think there's enough size and tools and speed to, you know, at least give him a shot early on if he earns it. So we'll see what happens there. But do the Bruins have enough good prospects? 5.3% said yes. 94.7% said no.
God, there are a lot of optimistic people out there.
Yeah. But as Fluto mentions in this article, a good point, with filling the prospect pool with undrafted free agents from college, I mean, Jack Hachan, guy that's caught in the logjam, which I hate because I love Jack Hachan. I think he's an NHL defenseman. Mark McLaughlin, who we're going to see some more of this year. And Georgi Mrkulov. Those are some good guys that have helped restock the pool from the college level. I like Mrkulov. I wonder if we see him as a call-up this year. Maybe not. Maybe they give him a full year in Providence. But I think there's a potential NHL player in Georgi Mrkulov, early return. But I don't think it's going to be right away. But kid's got some legit skills and some things to get excited about. So I'm optimistic about Mrkulov. I think they could have an NHL player there sometime. But no, they do not have enough good prospects. They don't.
Not even close.
Have they drafted well? No. And 94.9% of people agree. They just haven't. The recent drafts, the early returns look good, but we never truly know until, you know, we're a couple more years down the line. And there just hasn't been enough from 2014 to 2018. You've had McAvoy, DeBrusk, Pastrnak, Carlo, you know, a few guys, but you know, Jeremy Lozon worked out for a little bit, but now he's on a 4-year extension with the Nashville Predators. Still hilarious that they give up a second round pick for him. Jeremy Lozon's just not very good. And he's kind of got rock brains at times, but
it's a generous 5.1.
This is a guy that I once had as my favorite Bruins prospect in the system a few years ago, and for good reason, but it just hasn't really translated to the NHL level too well for him. But he got a 4-year contract extension, so, you know, good for him. Not gonna hate on that. So
get paid for showing up.
Yeah, get paid for showing up. Nashville really likes him, apparently. So I don't know about the fans, but David Poile does. So that's what matters. Not great poll results. Not at all.
No, not in the slightest.
Nope. The summer of pasta recruiting David Krejci, and then he hops into a live stream and tried to get his buddy Corrali to come back, or just saying how much he misses him.
I'd same take Sean Corrali back in this heart at this rate. It's better than what they have on the fourth line right now.
Yeah, give me Sean Corrali for 4 years over 2 years, Nick Foligno. That might sound stupid to people, but give it to me. At $2.5 million,
I think you'd be dumb to think that's stupid.
Yeah.
You'd be stupid to think that's stupid.
Yeah. Oh, I miss Corrali. I do. Career year, though, in Columbus King. Rumored finalist for the head coaching job, per Elliot Friedman on the 32 Thoughts podcast. Jay Leach, Nate Lehman, and Jim Montgomery are in the mix. Per Sean Hutchian of the fourth period, Jay Leach, David Quinn, and Barry Trotz are in the mix. And Joe McDonald today says, Jim Montgomery, Jay Leach, Joe Sacco, Spencer Carberry, and David Quinn are scheduled to interview with the team. And Elliot Friedman wonders if Barry Trotz is in the mix. So let's run through these candidates a little bit.
Okay.
Familiarity and respect in the organization with Jay Leach. Feels like a guy who could thrive in the right opportunity. Tough to get going in Seattle much, you know, with an expansion team. But for the right opportunity, I could absolutely see him coming back. And the fact that he's interviewing is good. Very happy to see that. Nate Lehman was not mentioned amongst the people scheduled to interview. My whole thing from the start is I'd be surprised if he left Providence after signing a multi-year contract extension on May 5th. But the Bruins have had interest in him dating back to the time they hired Cassidy. Nate Lehman was in the mix. And last year they tried to get him to coach the Providence Bruins and leave Providence College. But they wanted Ryan Mouchnell, and Lehman didn't want to leave. So you might say, oh, like, why would you take an NHL job? But he's like a god in Providence College. So
You know, why would you leave that?
He just got a shiny new extension, so that doesn't hurt either. Jim Montgomery, head coach of the University of Denver for 4 years, 2017 national championship over Minnesota Duluth, went to the Dallas Stars, went to the St. Louis Blues as an assistant. Those are his most recent bits of experience. Didn't end well in Dallas. He was fired by the Stars and checked himself into rehab for alcohol abuse. Jim Nill mentioned the following when firing him on December 10th, 2019. He showed unprofessional conduct inconsistent with the core values and beliefs of the Dallas Stars, the National Hockey League. It was a material act of unprofessionalism. It was cited by Elliot Friedman as a personal behavior issue. And Montgomery himself said the Stars made the appropriate call firing him, and it made him realize he was living a damaging lifestyle. So credit to him for, you know, having the wherewithal to, you know, get help for himself. I like the pedigree with Montgomery. I hope for his personal sake and for the Bruins' sake or any team, if they were to hire him, that these wouldn't become an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the pedigree of Montgomery. He doesn't like excite me as much as he would have coming out of Denver a few years ago, but I'd be okay with it. But it's not one of the names that gets me the most excited. David Quinn, not huge on David Quinn.
No.
He's a local guy from Cranston, Rhode Island, I believe. He's got familiarity with Grizzly and McAvoy through BU. Experience with the U.S. development program. I don't think – he might have been there when Grizzly was there, but, you know, he knows Grizzly with the BU ties. I don't remember if he was an assistant before he became head coach. I don't remember his exact past. I should, as a huge college hockey guy, but it's whatever. He's got some experience with the U.S. development program. There's not enough to get me excited about him. And I wasn't overly impressed with his time in New York. Did not finish with a great overall record there and obviously was fired. Wasn't a huge fan of what he was able to accomplish with that team. He doesn't excite me. I think there are better options out there. Barry Trotz. We know the spiel of Barry Trotz. Would be pretty good. Fairly similar style to Cassidy in some ways. So maybe, you know, that doesn't end up working out. But
wouldn't that take him out of the running then? Because wasn't the explanation from Sweeney and Neely is they wanted a change in the style of how the Bruins played, like, and Trotz, that's why they threw that on Cassidy?
Trotz is more so, like, not in the same boat as Cassidy of, like, how Cassidy went out here with, like, certain players. And, like,
okay,
I don't know about, like, relationship with players being a super bad thing, but, like, his kind of, like, defensive style, which could go good because the Bruins were very good in terms of limiting high-danger scoring chances, top three in the league every year for 5 years. Firing that coach makes sense.
We can't, so we gave that stat last week as to why you shouldn't have fired, like, what the Bruce fuck? Cassidy. All right, so on the flip side,
It's a weird one.
Okay, because I was going to say, would Barry Trotz, with his pedigree, you know, how long he's been in the league and then the success he's had, would he be a guy that would tolerate Don Sweeney and Cam Neely breathing down his neck, which I don't think he would. Like, I feel like you have like a get bent and let me coach the team the way I want to coach situation. Like, I've done this long enough. I know what it takes to win in this league. Like, get effed, basically.
There's some speculation, too, with Barry Trotz. I want to say this before it slips my mind, that he might join Nashville, one of his old homes, in the front office. So okay, there's a chance he doesn't even coach.
I was going to say, a front office job and a coaching job depends on which way you want to go here.
I don't know. I'm not leaning towards Barry Trotz getting hired by the
Bulls. No, I don't. Yeah. So I'm not, I think really that's a long shot. Invested.
It's a long shot, but it definitely could happen. It's not to rule it out. And I trust, you know, there's of course the potential for more candidates to be interviewed other than the five that Joe McDonald mentioned. But I don't know. I kind of get a sense, unless things change drastically, that this is probably the five guys they're going to choose from, being Montgomery, Leach, Sacco, Carberry, and Quinn. So, you know, Joe McDonald's pretty plugged in. So I don't know. There just doesn't feel like, there seems to be like different levels of momentum towards him coming here. So that kind of makes me skeptical to whether he's actually going to or not. But I'm leaning towards no. Joe Sacco, familiarity, currently an assistant coach, coaching experience for 4 years with the Colorado Avalanche at a sub 500 record, 130, 134, and 30, over four seasons from 2009 to 2013. So he hasn't been a head coach since 2013. I don't know. With the familiarity and the, you know, some coaching experience, I'd be okay with Sacco, but it doesn't really get me very excited.
Yeah, it's not a move the needle type of thing.
Yeah, and I'd be okay with it, but yeah, not overly excited about it. Spencer Carberry is an interesting one, though, because he does have interest in the organization for a year with Providence as an assistant. Solid amount of success with the Hershey Bears for 3 years before going to run Toronto's number one ranked power play this year. Not only are you bringing in a potentially up-and-coming mind, you are taking an asset away from a team you're competing with.
Wouldn't hate that, especially seeing that it's Toronto.
Yeah, will that just cave in Toronto's power play for the foreseeable future? I don't know, but I think it will hurt it a little bit, which doesn't hurt the Bruins. So I like the idea of Spencer Carberry. I think there's some untapped potential there that they could, you know, cash in on. And Jay Leach is kind of in a similar boat. Those are my two guys I think right now I want the most. I want Carberry or I want Leach. If, you know, it gets to a point where they wait to see whether Tampa's going to let them potentially interview Lalonde. By the way, condolences to Derek Lalonde as his mom recently passed away. Or Jeff Halpern in Tampa. Maybe you do that, but I don't know if Tampa would let a competing team interview one of their guys, but you never know. Detroit could be in the mix, not as much of a competitor, but a team in the division. We'll see what happens there. But right now with the situation, I would hope to see Leach or Carberry. Obviously, I've mentioned I like Lehman, but I just don't see him leaving Providence. But if he were to leave, he would be at the top of my list. So I hope there's a chance he leaves Providence and comes to the Bruins, because I think they have interest in him for very good reason. And I think he could be a great NHL coach. But those are really the options. If you had to pick one right now out of the names we mentioned, who sticks out to you the most?
Leach, probably, because he's the name I continuously hear come up. You have it in here every, not specialist, but every, you know, head guy or reporter that, you know, does the NHL seems to have him on their list. And like you have in the outline, you know, the familiarity with the organization, I feel like his name has kind of come up in whispers over the last couple, or just in general. So I feel like he's the type of guy that, like, to me, with everything that you have in the outline and everything you said, he seems just like an automatic, like, finalist right out of the gate. Like, if they whittle this list down to two or three guys, it just, to me, it seems like he's going to be a shoe-in to be on it.
Yeah. One of my first guys I thought of was Chris Kelly promotion, but it doesn't seem like they're really considering him.
No. Which doesn't, yeah, it doesn't seem like internally.
Yeah.
Like from Cassidy's coaching tree, I guess, you could say.
Because he doesn't have enough experience yet. Maybe they want to go with an outside hire, even though, you know, they are looking internally with Sacco in particular. I think if I had to pick right now, it'd be Leach. If I had to say one guy is going to get hired, it's going to be Leach. I would like to see Carberry, as I mentioned, like to see Lehman. Trotz would be nice, but I don't know. I like the other guy's styles a little bit more to give a change and a new voice. And maybe you get an up-and-comer like Leach or Carberry, hopefully. And Lehman, of course, would be his first NHL coaching experience. But a guy that, you know, that's more so like an established guy in terms of a head coaching role, even at the college level, than Leach, who's been, you know, a Providence coach and an assistant. And, yeah, so then Carberry, who hasn't really had any head coaching experience besides with Hershey and the minors. So a lot of different ways to look at it, but I'm leaning towards Leach. Maybe that should be the hashtag, leaning towards Leach, like they did with what's a good one with, you know, like Tank for whoever, like
Tank for Tua.
Tank for Tua, yeah, like something like that. Oh god, Tua.
Free fake Clay.
Free fake Clay, yeah.
Yeah.
If only he had a first name that started with F, they could just do FFF.
Yeah.
And yeah, one last thing, Don Sweeney just still doesn't have a contract. Do you think they would, you know, have that ironed out and announce it already?
No.
But they're waiting to dump it in, like, the Celtics could lose. Hopefully they don't lose. The Celtics could lose and they'll just announce it. Like, it's, even if it's at, like, it'll be, like, what, like, midnight?
Yep.
Around midnight, they'll just drop it then.
I wouldn't be My two predictions are it's either – whether the Celtics win or lose the finals, it's getting dropped whenever that may be, or whenever Tampa Bay or Colorado wins the cup, they'll drop it like, oh, hey, by the way, we hired a new head coach, or no, we gave Don Sweeney a new contract.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll do both. Maybe they'll do the Sweeney contract if the Celtics win or lose the finals, and then when the cup finals comes to an end, then they'll have their head coaching announcement to try to top the stupidly timed GM extension or new contract.
I just realized I've had Ian's name as my display name the whole time.
Nice. But you are not Ian Glendon.
Not Ian Glendon. Just to clear that, for, that up for anyone.
I don't have a space in between mine. I just noticed that too. So we are struggling tonight with the okay, small little fine. Technical things.
Everybody listening will get over it. I'm already over it. You're already over it. So
there's people going crazy in the comments right now. What the fuck? These aren't the people we're used to.
Identity theft is not a joke, Jay.
Yeah.
Stanley Cup Finals preview and predictions. 11 series wins in a row now for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Andre Vasilevsky has let up like 2 goals in the last, what, 7 or 8 elimination games? I think it's 7. It's
ridiculous.
They're just ridiculous. They're getting Brayden Point back. Nazem Kadri might be back at some point.
They can't keep Kempers getting away net. With it.
Yeah, right.
It's year after year with net. The Lightning. That's it's just that meme.
They can't keep getting away with this. The Jesse yep. Pinkman. Yep. My God, like, it really does feel like Tampa could just do this year after year, like, even past this year, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy start in the first period. Not changing my prediction, though.
Damn it.
I'm going Lightning in 6.
Boo.
I'm going Lightning in 6.
Be original.
I can't bet against them. I can't
go against the trend.
I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. I simply can't. There are many reasons to pick Colorado, and they're well-founded. But you have a goalie, you don't know what to expect with coming back. He had 15 days off with injury and, you know, time between series. Frank Kuz was good when he came in, but not the most, like, reliable guy you want to win a Stanley Cup. Lack of experience and just not being, like, an elite potential goalie like Darcy Kuemper can be. And what Vasilevsky, what we know he is. But the thing for Colorado, primarily for me, is that it's Tampa's toughest test.
Yep.
It is. Cale Makar is establishing himself as a top 3 player overall in the league. He is the best defenseman in the league. I think Roman Josi will win the Norris this year, but Cale Makar's got a really good case, you know, otherwise, and of course doesn't factor in playoff stuff. Cale Makar is ridiculous, and to see how Tampa and particularly Hedman will be able to handle him is going to be fascinating to watch. We know what the Nate Dogg is capable of. Nate McKinnon, he wants to win bad. It was funny that picture that came out of him with Gretzky holding the cup behind him and Pedro Maguire mentioning him again. Said it made it look like Wayne Gretzky was going to like bash McKinnon over the head with the cup, which was pretty funny.
Take this.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that until he tweeted that, but. I just think Tampa's going to find a way to get it done. They always do when they need to. The thought of Pat Maroon, I hate Pat Maroon much less than I did after 2019.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be cool to see him win four, but I'd just rather not in a row. Like, that would just, I'd like to see you Colorado just win.
Do that, yeah.
I'd like to see, there's not like a, everybody's like, oh, seeing Jack Johnson win would be cool. That'd be cool, but like, not huge, like, clamoring for Jack Johnson to win. Seeing Andrew Conquiliano win would be cool. Guy that's been around for a while, paid his dues, dealing with some injury trouble right now, but it would be cool to see Andrew Conquiliano win, and potentially they take the reins if they win this Colorado from Tampa. Maybe they go on a run.
That'd be something.
Yeah, I mean, they got Kel McCarr locked up. They don't have to worry about locking him up this summer. They got him at under market value at $9 million a year, which is ridiculous.
That's insane. Yep.
And yeah, they kind of said to him, like, hey, if you take a little bit less than market value, it can allow us to keep these guys around because they got a cap crunch coming this year. Burakovsky, Nichushkin, Kadri, free agent. Other moves to make as well. I think Lekkonen's an RFA, and he's been great. He's scored the goals that have led his last two teams to the Cup Finals 2 years in a row. He's clutch, too. He did it with the Canadiens last year, now the Avalanche. I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it. Six games to some people might be blasphemy. I feel like the popular belief is this is going to go seven. I hope it does. But I think the Lightning are going to get it done. And I think if they're at a point where 3-2 after five games, they're going to close it out at home. And even if they lose game five and are down 3-2, Vasilevsky in elimination games is a god.
Yeah, the guy's unbeatable.
He's a god amongst us. I can't bet against them, and I can't bet against Andrei Vasilevsky in particular. They're struggling in game one, but they struggle in game ones. It's going to be three in a row. They're going to be one of the greatest dynasties ever. Like,
listen to the Felger and Mazadek. Felger put him at the top if they win three. Like he said, better than the – I obviously don't know anything about the Red Wings team that won a bunch and whatever that time was. You probably have more insight on that than I do, but like he said, he'd put him above that Red Wings team whenever they went on their run.
The Islanders, when they won four in a row, when the Oilers won all those in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Islanders winning four in a row, like era adjusted, it's insane. I think it's tougher to win a cup nowadays than it was back then, but four in a row, like just from the number at the very minimum, which is obviously one more than three.
Mm-hmm. Very good math.
It's crazy. But, I mean, like, in terms of error-adjusted things and, how they've retooled this team over the years, too. Like, they lost their whole third line last year, and now they're back. Like, what Andrei Vasilevsky has been capable of, like, is they're way up there in sports in general. Like, they're way up there. I'm not going to put the whole power rankings out there if they win this. But they're way up there. And it's pretty interesting how they can – the series can go like, oh, Colorado wins and potentially starts a dynasty of their own, or Tampa wins, gets their third and
continues, maybe wins
fucking fourth next year. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm going Lightning in six. I can't bet against them. Stamkos has been clutch. Palat has like 10 playoff game winning goals now. He's a pending UFA. These are potentially his last games, probably his last games as a member of the Lightning, unless they get creative. There's a lot for both teams to play for, but I'm going with Tampa. They're tried and true, and I'm not betting against them. I can't do it.
All right. I'll do that for you then. I'm not going to give any sort of insight other than I just flat out don't want to see the Lightning win a third cup in a row. So that's, again, the goaltending thing is legit. That's kind of what I've heard. Obviously, again, like you said, you don't bet against Andrei Vasilevsky at this point. Like, you'd be dumb to do that. But I'm going to be one of those dumb people. I think Avs in seven, like I said, just because I don't want to see the Lightning win a third straight cup.
You're off to a good start right now, even though the Lightning starts slow. Colorado's up 3-1.
That's true.
Currently being bad boys right now. Corey Perry's ruffling feathers. Pat Maroon's ruffling feathers. Ove Kubel's in the mix. Got some guys going to the box to sit down, but I could absolutely see the Avs win, but I've thought about it for a large portion of the day in particular, of course, like ever since leading to the Cup final being finalized a few days ago too. I can't get past Tampa. I can't. I can't pick against them. Just can't do it.
Yep.
I hope I'm wrong though. Would love to see Colorado win. Nate Dogg.
I just hope both teams have fun. That's all I care about. I hope
we go seven games and there's a bunch of overtime games.
That'd be great. Yep.
That'd be lots of fun.
That'd be fun from the outside watching in, but if you're an Avs fan or a Lightning fan, I don't wish that headache and that heart attack upon you night in after night out.
And win or lose, I want to see Kale McCarr just go ballistic. Like, I want to see as much awesome Kale McCarr hockey as possible, in particular until next season. So he's truly out of this world. He's potentially going to be the best defenseman to ever play hockey, and he's just insane.
Felger brought that up too today, listening to them, that I think was Kevin Paul DuPont, get the name right. I think he said in whatever article he wrote or column he wrote, said he's the closest to Bobby Orr that we've seen since Bobby Orr.
Absolutely is.
All right, closest fair enough.
Most recent since Orr is Paul Coffey, too. Paul
Coffey, that's what, yeah. Felger was saying that.
Yeah, Paul Coffey, multiple, like 120 plus point seasons. But yeah, Bobby Orr, Paul Coffey. Two of the names that stick out.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Coffey, I'm trying to remember just for reference here. Yeah, he played from 1980 to 2001, which his final season was with the Bruins, of course. So, yep.
The only thing I know about Paul Coffey is I can't remember if my buddy said uncle or grandfather or what he is, but I think it was uncle of a friend of mine I went to high school with. So, fun fact there.
Nice.
Yep.
With 1,531 points in 1,409 games.
A lot for a defenseman.
1,135 of those were assists. Guy was a machine.
Insanity.
That's pretty nuts. And he did play in our lifetime a little bit, but when we were just young little whippersnappers. So, I got Lightning in six. Ryan's got Avalanche in seven. I would prefer your result. But we'll see how Braden Point factors into this too with Nazem Kadri and if Kemper can stay healthy. It's going to be a fun series. This could be one of the better Stanley Cup finals of our lifetime. There's a lot to look forward to here.
That was a consensus I saw, is that like you got probably the two best teams out of both leagues for the first time in a while.
This is like playing in the cup. I might have picked this exact cup final the previous
two last years. Yeah.
Like
you said, the first year you went against it. Yeah.
Yeah. I said at the beginning of the playoffs this year, I'm going to pick against Colorado, and this is going to be they go to the cup finals. And lo and behold,
if the Lightning win, can I get half points for my original prediction at the start when we did this? I did have a Florida team beating the Avs in the Cup Finals, except it was the Panthers.
Yeah, you can get half points.
All right, cool. I'll take half credit. Thank you.
Flames, so that didn't work.
Nope.
Panthers over Flames, not great, but
no, not a great one.
I felt decent about it.
Nope.
It
wasn't, but didn't expect the best scoring team in hockey to get absolutely decimated the first round of the playoffs. Like they weren't even there. Thanks for showing up.
No, the Panthers lost in the second round, bro.
I thought they got swept in the first round by Tampa Bay.
That was the second round.
Second round by Tampa? Okay, that shows how much I've paid attention outside of the Bruins when it comes to...
Florida played Washington.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it feels like so long ago.
That's what I mean,
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But unless you have any other things you want to touch on, I think...
I do not. I'll say my prayers tomorrow for the Celtics and hopefully they can force a game seven. And like we said, anything goes in game seven. So who knows, but hopefully I can build up some optimism. Yep.
Picture of Deuce in the locker stall.
Deuce has got a mean jab step. I don't know if you've seen that video on
Deuce got tripped by a ref.
He did. I saw that too. A referee should be fired into the sun.
He's an enemy.
Yep.
If you're not with me, then you're my enemy.
Yep.
Very
timely.
Yeah. What an episode today. That's going to wrap it up. Next week, episode 100. Pretty fucking nuts.
It'd be so nice if the Celtics could win a championship for the 100th episode. Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, come on.
Great timing.
Let's start a hashtag.
Yep.
Hashtag Celtics win for episode 100, please.
Hashtag win for 100.
Hashtag win for 100. Yep. Get it trending. That would be something. Thank you for listening. Episode 99 in the books. I am so tired, and if I didn't have a snack, I would be starving right now because I need to eat dinner after this, a late dinner. But thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you all, new and old listeners. Please continue listening. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Crady. You can follow the show at @SoundCradyPod. You can follow Ryan at @Ryan_Savaggio. Savaggio and Crady on TikTok. Download the Full Press Coverage app. Check out all the Full Press Coverage content. Follow Full Press Coverage on Twitch and YouTube. Do all that good stuff. And, stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people. Hopefully the Celtics win a championship. That'd be cool to talk about and all that other good stuff surrounding winning championships. As we know,
I like those.
Yeah, but we'll see you next week. Episode 100. It's a big one. Maybe we'll have something special in store. Maybe we won't. But either way, you get to see our smiling faces. So,
Unless the Celtics lose, then I'll be sad.
Yeah, then we'll be sad. But then we'll see what happens with the Bruins. But we'll talk to you then. Episode 91. Or 91. Wow.
100. Wow, we just erased 9 of them.
My brain gets a little scrambled at the end.
Time to go to bed.
Yeah, time to eat and then go to bed. And, you know, wake up for work tomorrow. Till next time. Peace out.